What's up, everyone? This episode of the Smoking Tire Podcast is brought to you by StockX. StockX is the world's first online stock market of things for high-demand consumer products, including sneakers, watches, and handbags. StockX connects buyers and sellers using the same methodology as the world's stock markets, an anonymous live bid-ask market. All products are physically authenticated by StockX, allowing participants to focus on the transparency of data available, including real-time market pricing. That means no stressing about shady buyers and sellers, no lengthy descriptions, and no blurry pictures to decipher. All watches are in excellent or better condition. All you have to worry about is finding the watch you want and placing a bid you feel comfortable with. Stay tuned, because later today, on my Instagram, I will be giving out the prize by StockX of an Autodromo Group B Evolucione watch. It's a really neat kind of automotive-inspired watch that is actually sold out. This is pretty much the last place to get it. Head over to my Instagram right now to get in on that before it closes, or visit StockX.com/smoking to check out StockX today. We are also brought to you by Continental Belts and Hoses. Listen, belts aren't really something you think about in your car. Hoses aren't really something you think about in your car. But these things rot, they dry out, they crack, and when they do, they can cause really big problems. Continental Belts and Hoses are OE in tens of millions of Chrysler, Dodge, Ford, and GM vehicles that roll off the assembly line. They're also original equipment on the majority of BMWs and Volkswagens. Now, Continental is launching the aftermarket Multi-V belt with the OE pedigree. It's their OE technology series. Belts that are fanatically engineered for perfect fit, form, and function. And Continental has an OE technology series Multi-V belt for 98% of the vehicles on the road in the US and Canada. Hey, you get enough surprises working on cars and trucks, a belt shouldn't be one of them. Go with the Continental OE Technology Series Multi-V Belt, the belt with the OE pedigree. To get the full story, visit oetechnologyseries.com. Okay, on this episode of the Smoking Tire Podcast, I have wanted to get Sean Morris on the show for some time. He is one of the world's foremost experts on the Nissan Skyline. He has a ton of experience shipping cars around the world, importing and exporting. The Skyline is still his bread and butter, but we're going to go have an interesting, in-depth conversation about all different kinds of imported and importable vehicles. It's a really good episode of this show, and we also get some of the backstory on the Motorex and Skylines being seized scandal. We get the truth behind that. Sean Morris on the Smoking Tire Podcast.
Three, two, one.
Go.
Show. What's up, everybody? Smoking Tire Podcast on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. It actually is a fucking beautiful Wednesday afternoon.
It is really nice outside.
Oh, my God.
This is why we live in L.A.
Sean Morris in the house.
Yes, sir.
Top rank international vehicle importers.
Yes.
The legendary Skyline salesman.
See, that's what I was saying. I'm like, I try to get away from the sales side of it. Like,
oh, yeah?
You know, that's...
Well, I'm sorry for fucking up your intro.
No. I mean, I still... You know, do the marketing sales side of it a little bit, but not a lot. I mostly, you know, I'm more on the technical side of it and a little bit more on the marketing side now.
Oh,
so,
okay. Well, that's good.
So,
well, let's introduce you. Follow Sean. Oh, my God.
That's
The Instagram is going to be tough. I'll pull it over up on the screen.
Oh, man.
Top rank underscore IVI underscore Sean underscore Morris.
Sorry. That's
fucked up. That's impossible.
No. No, that's just me, because you know, we have another one. It's like Top Rank Importers.
Rank Importers.
Yeah,
as well.
That's the better one. That's
okay,
the sales.
Cool.
Mine is just like me and like some of the, you know, shit that I do. So, I mean, if you look at this is, you know, the other guy's ones is a lot more like car centric. You know, all
yours
of that.
Has like your kids in it and shit.
No, like more technical.
Okay.
if you go back and have a quick look at it, you'll see like it's more like, you know, car parts and bullshit and a little bit of humor. But if I can, but you know, like here, what's that? And you're like, I don't know what the fuck that is. That is heated mirrors.
Heated mirrors.
In a cold weather package in an R32. So it's just like some like mostly like a little bit weird, off the wall, wacky.
I like that. I'm gonna follow both. Look at this. Rambo Lambos.
Yeah. You know, we were in Monterey for Car Week. Yes. And, you know, we're staying at the lovely Nights Inn there, you know, $500 a night for fucking Nights
Inn. For like
a
$40 hotel.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, when I woke up in the morning, we were talking about these before, and I woke up in the morning and I'm like, oh shit, there's two LMO-002s, yeah. And there's, because I was looking this up not long ago, it was like 350 of them made.
They didn't make very many at all.
350
yeah.
from total. And yeah. I was like, holy shit, there's two right there. So
I got a friend who's got one of them, and he says it's just, you know, it drives like garbage, obviously.
Yeah.
The shifter's like 9 feet to your right. But the big thing with these is the tires. So Pirelli apparently stamps a set of these out like once a decade.
Right.
And whether you've driven the car or not, you got to buy them. And they're like 10 grand.
There are some really oddball, like 345.
It's a 345, 65, 15 or some
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, some wacky thing. So there's the Delica that we drove up to Monterey.
Oh,
actually.
Is that your Delica?
So this R34.
Yeah,
so we took the, you know, I mean, we're just
tell me everything about the Delica, because this is the new hot shit in LA. I see surfers with these all the time now.
Yeah, you probably have seen Yaska.
Maybe the
with,
same one.
Maybe Yaska, let's say my business partner, maybe with that, because he takes it out surfing.
Does he come to Venice? He probably parks by my house if he surfs in
maybe.
Venice.
Maybe. So, but they're diesel, four-wheel drive. You know, not real fast or anything like that, but, you know, they're just kind of a, you know, I mean, a diesel four-wheel drive van and a small
That's
van.
Nice.
And, you know.
They're the right size. They're not, like, gigantic.
And we had all the rear seats. So it has actually three rows, but the rear seats, like, with the rear seats slid all the way back.
Yeah.
And then just driving up to Monterey with the four of us, it was
comfortable. Oh, so rear seats back and center seats out.
No, I'm sorry. The other way around. No, the center seat's back and the rear seat folded up. So that way we have all our shit in
and
the back.
And it's comfortable for four?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Like, you could, I mean, you know, you could fit a lot more shit than we had in there. So.
How much power do these things make?
Fuck, I don't have no
like,
idea.
Like, is it less than 100?
It will go.
Will it go 70?
Yes, it will go 70 on flat ground. Going downhill, I probably have the record for a Delica, which is about, what was it, 140K.
Okay, so that's like 85.
Yeah. Yeah. That was about all of it.
Super
but it, driving 70 is fine, but going up hills and stuff, it's a little, you know. Not.
I really like it as like a city runabout.
It's good. They're good. And then, yeah. You know, we have
Are
some,
they reliable?
I mean, they're diesel.
Can you find parts for them and shit?
I don't know.
They don't really break?
I don't really break, as far as I know. So
I had a go recently in one of those Honda City, like a little K-van.
Yeah, yeah, we have Actes.
A
couple Actes.
It was actually kind of nice. I mean, for like a tiny little thing.
The thing that I like about like those little... So we have a Samba. And
I'll pull up your inventory. Inventory is importofvehicle.com. I poke around your website a lot more often than I talk to you.
Okay.
I love seeing what... Oh, here's the Acti.
So one of the cool parts about the Acti, right? So it's double slider. So something this small, and it's got a slider on each side. It's
rad.
Like, it's like, you know, you can use it for... I mean, obviously, you know...
32,000 miles and it's $8,000?
Yeah.
God,
yeah.
Your money goes a long way in one of these, doesn't it?
Right. So, and I mean, 660cc, you know, they're... You know, again, they're not
fast.
No, it's
for the city, though.
Right. Yeah,
look at that pad. Look at that little pad there. Thoughtful
mid-engine too.
How thoughtful the engine is it that the right
if
corner?
You keep, oh yeah. Keep, you keep looking down the here. You'll see the engine is underneath there.
It's underneath the back.
That's where the engine.
Oh my
is.
God! So, it's underneath like where the middle row is.
Right. Yeah. 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 So
does this have a middle row or is this a cargo van?
It's got the seat right here folds up.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
No seat belt there. But you know, when somebody really? Asked me that, I was like, I looked at it, I'm like, no seat belt. So
I do this event every year called Grid Life.
They use
Actes as like pit vehicles.
Right.
Road Atlanta.
Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift, they used them, you know, they loaded them up with all the toolboxes. And because of the double sliders and stuff,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you could put, you know, big nitrogen tanks and all the other shit in there and get around, and you can drive them everywhere. And some of them are four-wheel drive. And
dude, this thing is so then, practical.
Now look at the Samba. So to go back to inventory and look at the Suzuki Samba, which is not the Suzuki. Subaru. You have to go back to the full inventory. So inventory, just go current inventory.
Current inventory.
So go down, down, down.
You got a bunch of shit.
So the Samba.
Subaru Sambar. So, it's kind of the same thing as the Acti.
Right.
Small cave-in.
Right. So this one is rear engine, four-cylinder, supercharged. It's CVT.
Supercharged?
It's supercharged, and the engine is behind the rear bumper.
Oh, my God.
So this.
Is it also a 600 or a 660
660,
CC?
Yeah. But so if you look down, if you look through some of the other photos, you'll see, hopefully there's one. Oh, yeah, here it is.
Here's the engine.
Right. So
holy shit, look at that.
I mean.
It's all compacted into this tiny little space behind the rear bumper.
And so then the crazy part, like the radiator cap is up here.
What?
Up
like
above.
Up on the...
Up in the door jamb. Oh, there you go.
Oh, here's the radiator cap above the taillight in the door jamb. How about that?
I mean, it's just like weird shit. You know, I mean, there's all these like
bro,
weird cars.
Bro, this thing is fucking rad. When I build my... When I build, finish my collector car storage facility,
right.
I am 100% buying one of these as a shop car.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I... Why would you ever want anything bigger than this?
I mean, they're. I mean, you can drive them on the sidewalk.
Can I register this in California?
Yeah,
a K car
costs money, but yeah.
Do you have to? You have to carb it.
Yeah.
Is it the full 10 G's or is it tiny little thing? Four G's.
Yeah. I mean, 3850. The lab charged us the last time for small shit. So like cappuccino.
That's a pretty rad looking little cappuccino, dude. Yeah. We're gonna sit. Is this whole show just gonna be us
talking about inventory?
I mean, it's fine. Like, right. Here's the thing about Japanese cars and right. the kind of shit you sell. If you're willing to sit on the other side of the car, your money goes so far, right?
But there's also a lot of like cool stuff that just we never had.
Yeah.
You know, I mean that you know people always talk about. Well, the grass is greener on the other side, right? So
totally.
There's you know, so in other parts of the world, they look here, they look at the Mustangs, they look at Camaros, they look at the other things.
Yeah,
that
I
we
love
had,
going to Germany and seeing and they, Z06s,
right? Cadillacs and you know stuff over there. In
all right, what's the weird? What here's one for you. Let me throw this at you.
All right,
what is because you get around the world?
Yes.
What is the shittiest American car you've ever seen that someone spent the time and money to bring to a foreign country?
Well, let's talk about Toyota selling the Cavalier in Japan as a Toyota.
I'm sorry. The Chevrolet Cavalier?
No, a Toyota Cavalier.
What's a Toyota Cavalier?
Yeah, it's a Chevy Cavalier, but it's Toyota.
Wait, that's what I was saying.
Right. So it's a Toyota Cavalier.
Oh my God! Are you fucking kidding me? This is real?
No, it's real.
Oh my God! They really did this.
They really sold the Cavalier in
the worst American car
right.
ever
I mean,
made.
Yeah, this is like
and with the standard American powertrain and all this garbage.
Uh huh.
Did anybody buy this? Look
and
at
so
his
there's
head.
And so there's like a TRD kit for
a
this car.
Concept from the country that knows all about driving pleasure.
I've never
oh,
seen that ad, but okay.
My God! Wait, we need to zoom in. I need to read this. Okay. It's arrived, an American package based on a new concept, sedan and coupe. A car is both a daily necessity and a partner for life and leisure. America has developed an attractive, quote, automotive culture during its historical experience with the automobile. Toyota wants to let more people know about these unique values. What a fucking joke.
So there's a there's a TRD kit. And so there's guys there's guys in the U.S. that I've had ask before, like, can you get me a TRD kit for my Cavalier? And I'm, you know, I don't want to deal with that shit. But, you know,
have you ever seen one like on eBay or something?
Like I said, people ask,
dude, that's hilarious.
I don't want to deal with it.
You win. I mean, I was about to tell you about the time I went to Monaco and saw like one of those late 80s front wheel drive Cadillacs with the tuned port injection that someone brought over, you know, on like a C3 like an early 80s shitbox Corvette.
But, I mean, you know, my family, we export like lots of cars all over the world and stuff and over the years. And I mean, I've shipped some shit, man. Because I used to buy, you know, so somebody would buy a car off of eBay or buy a car off of Craigslist or some shit like that. And I would help facilitate the movement of the car to Australia. Mm. And man, I mean, some of the stuff that would show up, man, I was like, you know, I mean, fucking no floors in the Camaro or something. I'm like, holy shit, man. I mean, but they, you know, that was the thing is that because they never got Camaros, they never got Mustangs, they never got a lot of those cars, they wanted them.
Yeah.
And so, especially when, you know, we had the recession here in 2008 and all that, and the Australian dollar. So historically speaking, Australian money is about 70 cents to a US dollar. Mm. So they it takes them 30% more of their money to buy something that's, you know, a dollar here. So right. So if a $10,000 car in their kind of money, their idea cost them 13 grand.
Right.
So now it went to over 1-to-1, which means now their $10,000 buys $10,000 worth of car, and so we were selling a lot of stuff. And
how is it, if you're in Australia, is it easy to bring things in? Do they really care?
No, it's actually a little difficult. Yeah, they have some different what was called then roars, which uh-huh. is like workshop stuff, and we shipped a lot of caravans and other things down there. And the caravans, we had to convert like the door,
really
put the door on the other side, and
oh my god,
and
what a
tail lights and all kinds of other shit. But cars, it is difficult. And now the thing is that's changed is because they were protecting their market a bit, there's no but now there's no Holden, and there's no Ford, like
full
local.
There's no manufacturing
anymore, and so they've kind of changed some of what's going on. I haven't been paying too much attention to what is, but it's going to open that market up a little bit too.
They're going to have to, right? They just don't have that much stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's small though. I mean, there's only 25 million people, 27 million people there. So
when I was in New Zealand, you know, obviously different country, but same part of the world, New Zealand seemed to be pretty liberal about what you could bring there as long as it was right-hand drive.
Sure. I mean, I'm actually a New Zealander.
Are you?
Yeah.
Were you born there?
I was born in Christchurch, yeah.
Oh, really?
So my family originally we came here to the U.S. to bring cars to New Zealand.
Back to New Zealand.
Because then the rules were very different then about importing cars. And
they said now they will only import a left-hand drive car if it is special. It's a special. Like, I love that.
Special.
They're like, they won't bring in a Mustang, but they'll bring in a Shelby.
Or they'll bring in a Viper.
A Viper or a Lamborghini or something.
Or maybe some like a Z06 or a ZR1 or something
like that.
But
no normal cars, only special.
Yeah, but, you know, cars. To Australia, like, it was left-hand drive had to be over, I want to say it's the same, almost over 25 years unless you're in Northern Territory. And it was like 20 or something. And, you know, there's like different rules and regulations shit. But, you know, I don't stay on top of those if I'm not directly involved with it.
Did that business,
there's only so much room in my head for fucking,
believe me,
for all those regulations and stuff. So,
did that business happen? They're sending cars to New Zealand?
Us or
yeah, your family did that when they came here to do that. Is that what they ended up doing?
Well, no, we ended up selling cars here. Mm. You know, my family business, car sales, and then we actually around 89 we started to export a lot of cars to Japan.
Oh.
And so 89 we had cars that they were interested in, and so then we shipped quite a bit of stuff then, and then it got kind of crazier and crazier with the bubble. So I don't know why these people are here.
Somebody sent you money?
Somebody gave you $5?
Well, there's a feature called Super Chat, and if those of you listening live, if you want to ask us questions during the show, which we'll get to in the second half of the show, you hit us up in the Super Chat.
Oh man, they give
it's
you
a
money.
Good, they do, yeah, and it's a good. It's right. Not a lot of money, but it's a good
right.
filter,
right?
You know, it's like because that comments thing, like it just goes
there's just no way we'd get around.
But the Super Chat it allows you to separate it out a little bit.
Yes. Okay.
Let's talk about what people are buying right now. So 25 years ago is going to be mid-93. What's hot?
R32
R32s. Is that still the bread and butter? Is the Skyline
still? I mean, I'm almost out of what I have right now. I mean,
how many Skylines do you think you've legally imported?
I mean, a few hundred.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A bunch.
Yeah.
That's a bunch. And they made the most R32s, right?
GTR. 43,000, almost 44,000 R32 GTR. And then the other Skylines, the other, you know, different versions and stuff of them, there's about 300,000. So quite a lot.
A lot. And
yeah,
then what about R33 GTRs and then 34 GTRs?
16,000 and 11,000.
Wow. Really, really took a big why such a huge drop?
Economy.
That's it. So what happened in 95?
Yeah,
that really.
Japan's economy was shit.
Just tanked, huh?
Shit, yeah. I mean, that's what I was saying about, you know, exporting and all that stuff. I mean, we are exporting 89 till, probably up till 95. We were pretty pretty freaking busy. We're doing Astrovans and exporting them overseas.
So crazy that someone wants an Astrovan overseas. In hindsight,
man, we sold so many, it's not even fun. I mean, we used to do like 100 vans a month. You know, I mean, for like a small family run business,
that's
lot. We're out in Ontario area out there, and we're doing like I said, 100 vans a month. I mean, we had like 80 employees. We had like 4 paint booths. We had like full, you know, we're doing all this crazy shit.
Because you're moving the doors to the other sides and stuff, right?
No, we didn't have to do that. We're doing conversions, like raised roof. Astrovans. So and putting windows and you know all we're doing leather interior,
like
and
the
full
coach
flat
building
seats.
Kind of stuff.
Full flat seats and all this shit. So
cool.
You know, doing wood interior and you know TV, you know little
CRT
bullshit
TV.
You know, and we're doing you know some lowered ones and some other things. But you know, when I was it was fun when I was 16. So say like 1990, I went to Japan the first time in 91 with my dad, and that was when, you know, like I said, I was about 16, and we were you know, exporting exotics to Japan.
Okay.
And so that's when I first saw R32. That's when I started to really get into that car because, you know, they had all like the best motoring.
Oh, hell yeah.
VHS. And so, you know, R32 GTR out on track and, you know,
smoking fools.
Everything. You know, yeah. I mean, 10 laps of Fuji and it would be like, you know, every other car.
R32, F40, and
like, yeah, know, like, I mean, yeah, I mean, the, I mean, against his contemporaries then. So, I mean, you're looking at like, so 91, you know, you're still the Mark III Supras. Yeah. You're still, you know, 91 Corvette is, you know, I mean, shit, you know, I mean,
a 91
you know,
Corvette is not good.
Not a good car. No, no. I mean, it's much better than some
an 87 Corvette.
84 is shit.
The 80 is that that's the
crossfire,
first year, right?
That's
garbage. Yeah, you don't
so the 84 crossfire injected ones were bad. I mean, I said we exported them, so I you know, I had a bunch of the stuff. So I mean, you know, some people, you know, you think because that's what I deal with now is mostly Japanese cars, but I mean, American cars, and you know, it's Cyclone, Typhoon, Grand National. I mean, that's all like my personal stuff before like the Skylines and that. So I'm a kind of a turbo six cylinder guy.
Yeah. Well, you like. As far as, like, you pretty much, like, wrote the book on Skylines here in America. I mean, when I wanted to buy one and I was thinking about it, 7 people said, you have to talk to Sean. I mean,
right.
And 7 smart people, not randoms. I mean,
right. Well,
and then you have the, what was the website? It's like GTR blog or something like that?
GTR blog.
GTR blog.
GTR USA. GTR USA blog.
GTR USA blog.
Yeah, that's
right. I love this website because it breaks down in very simple terms. Uh-oh. Is that correct?
No, you had it right.
You did?
It was there, yeah.
What happened? I don't know. It went away.
I
fucked it up. But I like the... Where's the section that's like, so you want to make 600 horsepower?
Yeah. I mean, it depends. It's going to be here. How do I build a 500?
Oh, how do I build? But you really have like, these are the things you need for 400, 500, 600, 700.
Right.
It's just based on experience and what works.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm a pain in the ass and I got my own opinions and the rest of this stuff. I mean, I have history, you know, with the cars and I have history in general. I have, you know, getting back to just general Skyline stuff. I mean, you know, I family business, in 91, I went in the Navy. I was in the U.S. Navy for 6 years. So, I was a gas turbine electrician. I worked on
gas turbine electrician.
Yeah. So I worked on,
so is that plane engines?
No. So main propulsion for ships,
oh,
we actually
cool.
used big jet engines as for main propulsion.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it a jet engine with a prop shaft coming out of it?
Yeah, so basically, so you've
How
got
does that work?
Is
it they're geared down obviously,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, okay. So like I said, explaining this really simply and quickly, but so there's a
there's no time limit. Take
the
long way.
Okay. All right, well, no, so there's a compressor section and then there's an exhaust section, okay? And it's what you call aerodynamically coupled, which means it's not physically coupled like a turbocharger on an engine, right? The exhaust wheel and the compressor wheel are coupled.
Them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So now if you had another, exhaust wheel further on down the line and it's still spinning.
It's like a turbo on a turbo.
Yeah. Yeah. And
like
so
a
basically,
paddle wheel more,
basically, you know. So what happens is on a jet engine is it compresses air downwards. It goes into the combustion chamber, and then it heats it up. And then it would expand it past a set of blades.
Okay.
And so this whole big set of blades, which is called the turbine section, then was connected to a clutch, which is connected to a reduction gear, which then, you know, turned the shaft.
Yeah.
And so on a FFG, which is what I was on, a small ship, there's two of these things. They were about... they were about 18,000 horsepower each.
Is this an FFG?
That is an FFG.
Holy
I was on
shit,
FFG 46 USS
FFG,
Rents.
USS
Rents. Rentz.
Rentz. Let's see. Yeah. I want to see your ship.
Yeah, that was the ship that I was on. So, the
not a great as a ship.
That is not a great.
That is a
picture,
shit image. I apologize.
But that's,
so this has one or two jets.
Two
jets.
So so there's actually so the intakes for them are over here,
right,
and then
here.
The exhaust is up here, and then down here is where the reduction gear, and then up in here we had like what we call central control station where
wow.
we would. So I worked on the control systems for those. So I worked on but most of the time I spent in a room not much bigger than this, checking light bulbs, changing light bulbs, and making sure the diesel, because we had diesel generators,
uh-huh.
making sure the diesel generators ran. And so I was at school for almost 2 years, and I spent about 4 years on the ship and 4 years basically in CCS and running the stuff. So, but I mean, I got qualified up to engineering officer of the watch, which, as a young, like, you know, so I was an E5 and as a young guy, you know,
you're the highest engineer on that watch.
On that watch,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I had like so I was an E5. I had an E8 under me. So that's three. So like
three
I have,
levels up, but under,
but under
but
me
for
in,
you.
In the watch. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, you know, and so because I was I could run the turbines underway. But most of the time I worked on the electric plant. So, and then in port, you have what we call engineering duty officer.
Here, I found a much
clearer,
better, clearer picture.
Holy shit, it's huge.
Yeah, this one's huge.
Yeah,
yeah I feel I didn't do it justice before. Here's a much better image.
See, so, and we call it, you know, these are more or less like torpedo fodder, you know, a little tiny ship. You
what
know,
does this ship have? I see like a missile or something.
Yeah,
in the
and
front,
actually,
right?
They ended up taking them off after I was on. I mean, this ship is being decommed and. Sunk.
When was this thing built? Looks kind of old school.
It was 80.
80 something?
Yeah, like 1980.
What's it like to live on something like that? I mean,
you know, it's. I mean, it ends up being. So I went in the Navy when I was 17,
mm-hmm.
and so I was on the ship when I was about 19 till I was 23. And, I mean, when you're underway and you're out at sea and stuff, I mean, it's just, you know, you're just doing your job and working and doing the things that you...
And the fact that you're on a ship is not really relevant... Is that
yeah?
Like,
I mean,
love boats. Would
right.
I enjoy working on a boat for 4 years or
no,
not? Not really.
I mean, it's a you know. I kind of made a joke afterwards, you know, because we were talking about going on a cruise, and I'm like, man, I spent too much. I spent all my freaking time on a ship. But I mean, it's a bit different. But
yeah.
You know, it's just a work and
yeah.
a job. But I mean, it's pretty. It can be pretty intense because I mean, you can be someplace. I mean, I joined the ship in the Persian Gulf in '93.
They flew you out and
uh-huh.
pff, on
yeah,
and,
yeah. So yeah, you know, typical military.
Does that
military
feel
bullshit.
Uncomfortable, dangerous, or not? Do you feel safe on the ship because you have
generally
a big steel
you
thing.
Feel pretty safe
yeah.
because I mean you are you know surrounded by. You know, U.S. military, you know, presence, even though this, so like I said, say this is a small ship. It's 450 feet long and 20 feet wide. And this is small, 200 people.
Mm.
And then, you know, I mean, you have a tendency you get along with everybody and, you know, you party together. And I mean, it's like, you know, when you'd hit port and stuff like that, you know, I mean, somebody's
it's what you think.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there was a thing about some English sailors recently that were in Florida and they're like, you know, they got into some big bar brawls and some
that
other shit.
Right.
You know, I mean, I have possibly been in a bar brawl in Malaysia at some point. So,
yeah, did you get to see some like really amazing places though?
Yeah, I mean, I joined up the ship in the Persian Gulf in '93, and you know, Oman and Saudi Arabia and all through there, and then back through Australia, which was actually pretty nice because I had family in Australia. And then but I mean Vanuatu, India, Malaysia, Thailand.
I mean that's a,
all
that's,
the you know all the Pacific. So I did a whole bunch of stuff on the Pacific side, and like I said, because I did have family in Australia, and that it was nice to be able to actually visit like my grandparents, you know, and things like that. Most people won't have grandparents.
Most people don't have grandparents in Australia.
Yeah, with Philippines, you know, I mean, went to Philippines and
that's pretty cool, man.
Actually, I spent a week in Cabo San Lucas, a week in Mazatlan, a week in Vancouver.
Not so bad.
It's all good stuff when you're, you know, 20-year-old. So, you know, all good places.
20-year-old with a uniform.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't have to wear a uniform most of the time.
No,
so,
it didn't work. It didn't work with the...
It works. Yeah, it's fine. I mean, you know. Anyway, back to cars, right?
Dude, you know what? This is a flexible show. I don't mind spending 15 minutes on naval ships. Yeah. What actually... I meant to ask, what did that ship do? What was that ship's role?
So, FFG's role is anti-submarine.
Okay, so so torpedoes?
No, listening for so with helos and going out and but most of the time they would do like support for like for carriers, but we did a lot of independent steaming and we just got to go lots of cool places. I mean, basically we'd just go out and do some weird off the wall shit. But I said I didn't get to see. I mean, you don't get to see. Where I was, I just watched dials and screens and shit. So, you know, I just like,
I'm in a room full of gauges.
Full of gauges, exactly. Yeah. And so, I mean, and anyway, that's kind of my history and my background. And so then in the Navy, like everything has backups and, mm-hmm. and, you know, all that stuff. And so then, you know, I got out of the Navy, I went in the family business. By then, the Japanese recession had started to go down, and it was about 97. And then, you know, my family, again, they're still exporting and all of that. And that was when actually the Motorex stuff started
to
come up.
Yeah, so Motorex, I don't know if anyone, I mean, I know some people do, but I think the story of Motorex has been muddled by legend.
It is all so fucked up.
Do you want to give us the real story? Or
I'll give you as much of the real story as people listen to. I mean, there was a 0-60 article, you know, that Richard Chang did that mm-hmm. that had a lot of the real information in there, and I did that, you know, right afterwards. 0-60.
I'm just going to find it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, basically in about 97, I talked to
an archive.
To Hiro. Yeah. I talked to Hiro Nanahoshi, who was an exporter. He was an exporter friend. And he got the idea. He, young guy, and he's, you know, pretty smart. And he lived in the U.S. for a while. And he decided that he wanted to try to see if we could bring Skylines to the U.S. And everybody says, oh, you can't do that. You know, I mean, hindsight is 2020, and people are like, oh, well, you know, blah blah blah. I would have just done this or just done that. I'm like, man, you weren't there, so you can't really talk about this. Just wasn't something that was available, you know, just something wasn't that's going to happen. So Hiro went to Advance, and he, which is one of the people who he exported to, and, mm-hmm. and he got a $1 million loan, and started to actually, you know, move forward on bringing the cars into U.S. compliance. He contracted with some guys on the East Coast, and, you know, and started to do that. So
what would it take? I mean, the major stuff to get crash testing.
Crash testing was the big thing, right?
So you have to buy cars and then give them to the NHSTA?
No, we have to do it ourselves. Yeah.
So how do you do that? You get a lab?
We actually used a place up in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. It was MGA Labs up there. And so I wasn't directly involved. Like, I talked to Hiro about it. I was, you know, interested in it, all that stuff. I mean, and then, but in April 99, I kind of got pissed off with my family and told my dad to go fuck himself. And, you know, because, you know, working
it
family
happens.
Business, you
yeah,
know, I
that
mean,
happens.
And so anyway, so I kind of was in between somewhere to something to do. And so, I started to work with Hiro for Hiro and all that stuff. And so, that was when we started to get a little bit more into crash testing. And so we were getting ready to do maybe the fourth crash test mm-hmm. or something that we were doing. So I flew up to we flew to Chicago, actually stayed at a friend Nick Wong's house there in Chicago, and we went up to the lab and we watched one of the side impact tests. And so, you know, a lot of people say, oh, Motorex didn't do this or they didn't do that or, you know, whatever. Well, you know, all along the NHTSA was involved with like what was going to happen. And, you know, we had to, so we said, you know, the cars are substantially similar, right? And so we could pick what we wanted to crash test.
You mean 32, 33, 34,
right.
the substantially similar. So they let you do one for all?
For all. In the beginning, we said, hey, look, these, you know, with these early cars, you know, they were, not all of them had airbags and stuff like that. And so it was an option. And so, but these.
Were airbags an option in 32s?
In late 32.
Really?
I think we just sold one with an airbag.
With that wonky four-spoke wheel in the airbag? It's a Maxima wheel.
It's a fucking ugly steering wheel, man. It's horrible. Basically the later R32 had those available. And I mean, we could go into all the specifics about the regulations of when and all that, but we basically said, look, let's crash test these R33 GTSs because that's going to be the cheapest for, I mean, if you're going to crash this car, are you going to crash this the most expensive Mustang you can? Or are you going to, or if the NHTSA says, yeah, you know what? You can use these cars if you want. Here, this is what we're going to use. Is this okay? Yes, that's okay. Okay. Well, then we're not going to crash R33 GTRs. We're going to crash test these because they're substantially similar. Yeah. And so, you know, because that pops up a bit where people say, oh, well, you guys didn't crash test this. And it's like, well, man, we were given the choice. You know, we told them what we're going to do. We're given a choice of what to do, and this is what we wanted to really crash. So, so we did the crash testing and the rest, and you know, it ended up taking until 2000, and in 2000 they released. I'm trying to think now. No, it was November 15th, 1999. The first car was released. And so then they published in the Federal Register in 2000, and so then we were able to legally import cars. So and there's more than just the NHTSA. There's also EPA in California, and so EPA side then 7 years old, you have to do what's if it's less than 7 years old, you have to do get a certificate of conformance for it. If it's over that, it was what we call modern tests, which means you have to modify and test it. The difference,
meaning like additional catalytic converters or whatever, you might need.
Right. You know, like I said it starts, all this stuff gets complicated because there's so many different pieces and parts. Yeah. And like sometimes, you know, I leave things out and somebody will like, you know, be pedantic enough to oh, you missed this. And I'm like, it's just, I didn't want to.
Yeah. I'm not trying to gotcha.
You know, some people do. And they're like, oh, well, you didn't mention this. You didn't say that. Or, you know, hey. You know, because actually VCP 32 is still active, which means you could actually import R33 GTRs under VCP 32 right now.
Really?
But the problem is that when we did the crash testing, we put some information in there that was confidential, and then also some parts were made specifically for us. And because we did it that way, we made it impossible for even me to actually do it now. And
oh,
then,
really?
Yeah.
So only Motorex could do it? Is that?
Well, it's actually JK, which was the place that Motorex contracted with.
Oh, man.
And so
contracts on contracts.
Yeah, I got, you know, it's
so did
shitty.
So you said you did a few rounds of crash testing.
Yes.
Front, rear, side.
It was actually, and I mean, we used one car for two of the tests and then one car for the other side impact, although I think they ended up hitting both sides of that car because the crash test that we went to, the bumper went under the crash bar.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah.
Did those cars, you know, do they needed to be heavily reinforced? Modified?
Not heavily, but they needed mods. Yeah, they needed some modifications. And so there was modifications that needed to be done to the cars and then EPA and then, you know, California. And so, I mean, we used to charge, $17,000 to $25,000 to do it, which actually
sounds like a bargain,
right? Yeah, exactly. It's not really that much money. I mean, people
like
would 10 whine
just to do the smog now, right?
Yeah, I mean, people would whine about that then. Yeah, exactly. 10 to do California. That was pretty much of a bargain. I mean, the cost that we were selling cars for then is sometimes less than what I'm selling them for now. And you know, we didn't sell a lot of cars. I mean, definitely like the first one.
How many Motorex cars do you think?
130. Yeah. I mean, I have like VIN numbers for, I think, around 105. but there's a few that I miss, that I wasn't around for that I miss, because I used to do all the compliance like packages and stuff, like put everything together to send to the NHTSA. See, that's like another thing that people say, well, Motorex faked everything, and it's like I had to put together a package for every single one of those Motorex cars. Mm-hmm. I had to have photos, like front, side, you know, dash, airbag, like all this stuff, mm-hmm. all had to be put together and sent to the NHTSA. And this is like, you know, digital cameras, you know, in 2000, you know, they weren't so great.
And no,
they weren't
like so, you know, right. Shit.
And,
yeah.
and, you know, and putting that, those things together, you know, I mean, and photo editing and all that kind of shit, it didn't really exist. So, you know, NHTSA got and has all of those packages.
So where did it all go wrong?
Hero like party, man, who fucking go out to a hostess club and spend like, you know, $1,500 a night on fucking Monday.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, so again, this gets back to the young thing.
Yeah.
Young, you know, and like a good amount of money and go out and just party, okay. you know? And so, so things weren't getting done and things weren't, you know, staying on top of things. What happened to me is, like, you know, we had some customers up from Seattle. One guy flew down like three times to pick up his car because Hero told him it was ready. And I'm like, man, the car's not even here. and the shitty part was, like, so, you know, I'm working for Hero and I'm there. I'm sitting in the office and, you know, a customer shows up. And it's like, you know, guys there, hey, I'm here to pick up my car. Hero said it's ready. I'm like, oh, it's not ready. It's still down at the lab. It's still down at Gene K. And so, you know, and then I'm trying to call Hero from the office, and he doesn't pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, seriously, this, you know, you try to call him like 14 times, you know, and you're like,
okay,
you know, and I'm calling from the office number. I'm not calling him from like, you know, some
shady number.
Right.
Yeah,
I'm like, you know, man, you know, so after a while, I mean, I loved dealing with the GTR. I loved, you know, doing, you know, all the GTR related things. I just couldn't handle working with Hero, you know, and Hero just, you know, he just went down that path of just, you know, I mean, he got, you know, a little bit more into drugs, a little more into everything else.
Yeah,
and just, you know, I mean, it just fucked everything up. I mean, and if he would have just, you know, kind of kept on the path, it would have been fine. So then I left in, I think 2002. And so, you know, I was the one who was doing all the work, like as far as compliance work and all the rest of the things. And so, you know, after I left, then nobody really knew how to do what I did. And so, you know, I did, I said, about 100 cars when I was there. And after I left, in the next 4 years, they did like 20.
Wow. Okay. So, and so then, so business is not going well. It's not being run well once you left. Mm-hmm. What happened with the freak out of people's cars getting confiscated? Where did that all come from?
It didn't, well,
or was that, was something that, were else. Those two unrelated things something that became else. Related
yeah, those
to
are,
each other?
Those are, okay, so, what happened was there was a lot of cars that weren't being brought into compliance. Okay. And so there was about, like I said, about 30 cars that were just sitting. And Hero was
meaning intended to be brought into compliance, but hadn't been
done. And so and then the customer started complaining and talking to the NHTSA, and this is what kind of brought all the end around. And so, you know, Hero tried to do some weird shit, and I mean, in the end, you know, like a lot of people say, well, you know, what happened? Well, the Hero actually got busted for attempted kidnapping.
Oh. Well, that's right. That's where here's where the story takes a hard left.
Right.
Holy shit! Really?
Right. Yeah. So
is he in prison?
No, he did go to prison for
he
a little.
He did go to prison.
He did go to prison for a little while. So there was, you know, again, money, and so he. So as I said, I left in 2002. Some of the other guys, the Japanese guys, that were the export side of Advance, they left not that long after that. Mm-hmm. And so then Hero was basically on his own, and then he looked for more funding. And he got one guy to come in and bring money and bring cars and all this stuff. This other guy, Hiroki.
Hero and Hiroki.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's okay. Real life. That's how it is. So, so anyway, and then, you know, I think that Hero because he'd done it, and this had actually happened. I'll tell you this, but Enhiro had sold some of these cars of Hiroki's and not given him the money back for it, and kind of, you know, starting to, you know, turn it into almost a Ponzi. So, you know, so some of the guys that I knew when I was there, because people started to contact me after I left, maybe another, you know, year or two later, and say, hey, you know, my car's not getting done, you know, blah blah blah, what's going on? So these two guys, Jack and Jeff Tao, they, you know, they had a bunch of cars, and they're like, hey, what's going on? Can you help us? And so, you know, I started to help them out a little bit with some stuff, and that was the RB guys, RB Motoring guys. And so I said, yeah, you know, I can help you guys, you know, sell some cars and do some things. And, you know, I mean, one step removed from Hiro and all that stuff. And anyway, you know, some of the cars that were Hiro had, they just kind of disappeared. And so, you know, but I had one of their cars. I had like this R33. I had a white R33 GTR, and I'm there. I'm driving it. I get on the 60 freeway, and a white R33 passes me. Mm-hmm. And this is one, you know, and so.
And there's like 100 of these in the country, right?
Right, yeah. And I get on the freeway, I kind of wave the guy down, and we talk to him and all that stuff, and it's fucking one of Jack's missing cars.
Okay.
And so the guys had bought it. And so I.
So somebody sold it to them.
Well, Hiro
sold it
to them, but then he didn't give the money to Jack.
Okay.
So.
And none of the compliance was done.
No, the compliance was done. The compliance was done, but you know, he hadn't given the money. And so then, you know, by then it was, you know, it was $100,000 worth of cars or something of Jack's, and Hiro had owed him money on. And so, you know, I went in there one day and like, you know, hey, what the fuck is up? You know, and so, you know, they didn't really, they kind of got on the other side. Some of the guys there in Motorex got kind of on the other side of me because I was like, you know, what the fuck, dude? I saw this car on the freeway and I talked to the guy. He's got his number. I mean, should I call him and say, hey, you know, there's kind of a little bit of a dispute on the ownership of this vehicle. I mean, we can start to go down those paths, but, you know, but that's, again, that's just kind of some of the fuck-ups of what Hiro. And so, anyway, towards the end, there was a bunch of cars that went missing. And so they said this guy, Tom, had... I mean, some of the stuff is in the article, and so in the 0-60 article, this guy Tom had taken them, and he was going to register them for somebody because they weren't actually getting done right, and so he was going to register them for him, and then he'd turn around and sold them. But I almost think that Hiro had probably given it to him and then not paid the money onto Hiroki.
This is craziness,
right? So anyway, so they find this guy and they jump him and they. Like tasered him and anyway, and then Hiro and Hiroki end up getting arrested.
Wow, that's so crazy.
So, and this was 2006,
okay,
2005, so 2005. Yeah, this is about 2005. This is quite a long time after. And so, I'd actually met Hiro. I met up with him like a week before all that shit went down because it was like so many people were asking what's going on, and I'm like, look, let me see if I can help. To try to finish some, where are these cars are, what's happening, what can we do?
Yeah.
And then in the end, what happened is, I have something on my GTR blog thing. I just have a thing called MotorX the Letter, where basically at the end, if you just and put a space and then just put space and then put MotorX letter. Yeah. So there was a letter. So this is actually a picture of the crash test.
The end. Oh, there's the crash testing. How about that?
That's Arthur.
Here's the letter.
So this one is, I don't know what date that was.
The
can we date see that?
Is,
maybe I might have edited it out. So anyway. So anyway, this is just, this is basically NHTSA said, look, we know you imported this car with the, and you wanted to bring it into compliance.
Mm-hmm.
Motorex didn't do it. Fuck it. Here, you have your car. It's good. We don't care.
So NHTSA wrote a letter saying, we know this car is not in compliance,
yep,
but we don't really give a shit.
You can have it because we know you intended actually to originally bring it into compliance.
Okay.
So, you know, because some people say, oh, well, Motorex cars, you know, they're not legal or, you know, they all got seized or some other things happened.
Well, what I heard, and apparently is not correct, is that a bunch of cars were brought into compliance, and then a bunch more cars were not, but papers implied that they were. That's what I heard.
And so, you know, And I mean, you know, I have one fuck up, which is, you know, Big Bird, which is R33, which was imported with the Fast and Furious car, which, you know, imported, which I used as a drag car for a while and all that stuff. And that car has another, you know, kind of fucked up history story. You know, I mean, there's lots of stories and stuff. I could tell you all kinds of weird skyline things that I've done over the years and what happened. But so in fact that you endeavored to lawfully import the subject vehicle and have it brought into compliance with all of but were frustrated in your ability to obtain the release of the vehicle, blah, 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 beyond your control. The described above, decided to release the DOT conformance bond covering the subject vehicle. Basically, okay. They're saying it's legal. So,
okay.
You know, and that was the... So anyway...
So the cars that apparently were confiscated, they were not confiscated because of this. They were confiscated because of an ownership dispute?
Yeah.
So, wow, that turned into a game of telephone that resonated in the enthusiast community for years.
And it's still a lot of
people are so afraid of Skylines because they think these boogeymen are coming for their Skylines.
Yeah, but I mean, some of them are you know,
you should have a shady imported car.
There are tons of them, especially from Florida. So, you know,
Florida
has
all
of the...
Do not buy a car.
No, if it has a Florida title. If it has a Florida title, unless you have like everything, including somebody's blood type and, you know, I mean, their fucking sample of their DNA, I mean, you got to be careful. So, I mean, there are a lot of illegal cars, and there were always illegal cars here, cars that are imported incorrectly. Now,
were some of the ways that people would bring cars in incorrectly, like in parts, and
in parts, and assemble them? Yeah, and so, you know, here's the thing, right? I mean, honestly, like if you have a car, anything in particular, and you're quiet and you don't say shit, and you just have that car, nobody's probably going to mess with you, but. If you have an illegal car and you are on YouTube all the time and you're driving it around and you're doing all this stuff, you are going to have a problem. I can guarantee you that somebody eventually will say, what the fuck is Matt doing with this, you know, whatever this is, you know, you're the guy who's going to get busted. They're going to find something. Yeah, somebody's going to crawl up in and out your ass and you're
like,
going to have a problem.
Goodfellas. Right. Keep it quiet.
So, you know, and so my biggest problem with a lot of that stuff is that, you know, I have a problem when people turn around and they sell it on to somebody else. And they say, and this is a good car, you know. So somebody has this illegal car they imported through Florida, you know, to say an R34, R34. And, you know, and then they say, the thing is that when they turn around and they try to sell this car for 130 grand or something, I'm like, man, this car's got bad paper. It's worth what it is in Japan, minus, you know, what it's worth in Japan
less
or whatever.
Than Japan, right,
yeah. So, you know, don't pay what we would consider Motorex money for an R34 or legal money for an R34 when this car's got shitty paper. And then guys are like, oh, it's state titled. And it's like, yeah, but the problem is that, and it doesn't happen a lot, but I like some examples of when it does happen, which is, so Kaizo was a big one. So the stuff happened with them bringing in cars as kit cars. Uh-huh. So Fast and Furious 4. The blue R34 that was in there, that was a Kaizo car. That was cars that were imported as kits, and they weren't obviously kits. And so a bunch of those cars got popped. A lot of them stayed, but a lot of them got popped.
Uh-huh.
And people lost their cars, and they lost their money, and lost, you know, other stuff. So that's my biggest issue is that the guys who turn around and sell these cars on, and then this guy has it. So a car is trackable and traceable.
Totally.
Okay. You know, when it was registered in Florida, it has a Florida title, Florida information. You take it to Ohio, you take it to Pennsylvania, all that stuff. All that
it
is...
It follows you.
Yeah. So when that guy in Florida gets busted, and it has happened before, there's been a couple of different instances where the one guy's got popped, and then they just fucking follow the line, and man,
they show up at someone's house.
You know, I call it like a hot potato, man, because last fucker, you know, holding it, there's a guy who loses it. He loses his car, he loses his money.
Yeah.
And it sucks.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people are, you know, a lot of people are prepared for that. And some cars, you know, I mean, it doesn't happen a lot, but it does and it can happen.
I'll give you an anecdote real quick. Yeah. And I'm sure this is going to be one of 100. You're going to roll your eyes. Sure. You've heard this so many times, I bet. Mm-hmm. Before I bought the 32 from you, which was a fucking ace car, by the way. And actually, I wouldn't be surprised. I sold it to someone who loves it. And he's a commenter and he will probably appear in the comments and talk about it. And one day I'm going to buy another one because I actually miss it.
Okay.
Before that, I found on Craigslist a 33 GTR.
Right.
I knew it was shady because it's not 25 years old. Right. Nevertheless, I was intrigued.
Yep.
Just in the casual. And I think I spoke with you, as a matter of fact, afterwards, because I went there and the title said 1995 NISS.
Yeah. Well, no, but that's, but in California, that's actually what it says.
But what was the, but it didn't, it, what it said was it was, it stood for Nissani.
Yeah.
Not Nissan.
Yeah. See, that's a Kaizo
car. Which was a Kaizo car.
Yeah.
But unless you knew, like, it was, it was slightly different.
That, they did that on purpose.
Yeah.
So that it shows, because you see a California title on the title itself only has four positions.
Yeah.
So NISS, that shows, so it, Nissani, NISSIA, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
so basically you'd the title looked legit, but then you'd open the hood, and there was a plate that said Nissani, and you go, what the fuck is that?
Right, and so, you know, that's, I mean, I know the guy who did that really well. So, I visited him before he got too deep into all those things and all this kit car stuff and all of that, and I tried to help him in trying to do stuff, you know, if he was saying he was going to do it as a kit car, you know, if you had a body and you imported it and you put a, you know, a VQ or an LS engine or something like that, then that's, you know, I mean, that's kind of a kit, right? Yeah. I mean, that's not what the car was originally. The thing is that all these kit car laws are real ambiguous, and there's no real definition about where something starts to become a kit and where it isn't.
Yeah.
But what you can't do, according to the EPA, is you cannot import a disassembled vehicle for the purposes of evading, evading the laws.
Common sense, fucking
right. So you know, and that's the thing is, like, I mean, some guys, I mean, I get guys, fuck, I could probably pull up in our, you know, in our emails, you know, every day, every week, somebody says, oh, I found a way to import a car, and it's like, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. It's like, man, I've been doing this shit for 20 fucking years, dude. I mean, there's nothing that I haven't heard or seen or whatever.
What's
nothing,
the most ridiculous scheme someone has attempted to fucking throw on you?
I mean, those are just, that's just kind of a normal thing. I mean, I've had tons of people, you know, that
bro,
just,
I got
just
a private plane.
Right, you know, that's just all these schemes, you know, these guys are shady to start with, and then, you know, they get somebody, I'm so surprised sometimes they can get somebody to buy into this.
Yeah.
You know, like, there was some guy, and I have some information, some guy who's ex-Marine, he had some, like, FBI contacts and all this shit, and he gave some dude, like, 96 grand for an R34, for a car that the guy couldn't import, and he sent me an email, and I told him to stay away from it, and then, like, you know, a year or something later, there's a fucking Jalopnik article from this guy saying, oh, he gave this guy money. And it's like, I had to go back and look at my email and say, don't fucking buy this car. That's what it said.
Yeah.
And here, and it's like, how can I have any sympathy for your dumbass?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
You know, I mean, it's like, I tell people the truth, and I'm not going to tell people, like, things that don't actually happen in real life.
100%.
And you know, I mean, it gets down to speeding, right? Okay, so you're you know, our speed limit is, fuck, I don't even know what our speed limit is on the freeway. 65?
65 here.
Yeah, 65-ish.
70 in some places.
I mean, but, you know, you're going 80. You know, that's normal, right? But there are consequences for going 80 miles an hour.
There's a lot worse than if you're going 80 miles an hour in a shady car.
but I'm just saying, driving on the road, there are consequences for that, and you know what those consequences are. And so then if you do get pulled over, you know, you're going to, you know, face some kind of, you know, ticket or whatever, a warning. But, you know, just because you got a warning doesn't mean that, you know, the next time you won't. Mm-hmm. And so, like, a lot of the times, and what you hear a lot on these illegally imported cars is, oh, my buddy got pulled over, or my buddy had it for 10 years, or my buddy's, you know, you hear this kind of thing all the time.
Data is not the plural of anecdotes.
No,
sir.
So that's the thing, is it? Yeah. The thing is, most police, if you have insurance and registration and that, most police,
they
don't know, they don't care. They're not going to look at it. They're not going to give you a hard time about it. So,
doesn't mean you can't get fucked by somebody.
Yeah, I mean, that's how, you know, the Kaizo stuff supposedly started, was somebody got pulled over and, you know, they were being a little bit of a pain in the ass to the cop, and the cop had, like, customs ties and started to push from there. I mean, all that it takes is, you know, one person, because all that information is public.
Yeah.
It's all tied together. Yeah. So if a police officer pulls over a car, and then that car they pull over the Skyline.
Yeah.
You know, the Skyline you had, and they can see, oh well, you owned it and then you bought it from me.
Yeah.
Right? And so if it was imported incorrectly, then that's, you know, they wanted to come back to me and they're going to see that I have imported
two dozen cars or whatever. Right. Now they're going to go find all the cars.
Yeah. So now if they want to be a pain in the ass, they can. And so that's like my warning to people. And then guys, you know, I try to warn people so they understand what's going on. And then people say, oh, my buddy's had it for 10 years and he's been pulled over 10 times and it's no problem. I'm like, okay.
He's lucky.
Okay.
He might not be lucky the next time.
Yeah.
Depends on the cop.
Right.
What does a shady car that's already here mm-hmm. have any value at all? And if so, parts. What might that parts? That's it. Strip it, parts. It's done.
You know, it's technically never going to be legal. So unless
what happens with it when it once 25 happens? Once the paperwork's shady, it's shady.
It wasn't imported right.
Can you start over? Can you send it back to Japan and start over? I mean, not that
you could, but then you'd still need to like figure out something to do as far as, you know, title, getting the paperwork right. You know, you need to export it on a title and then, you know, I mean, it would be possible, but it's, you know, basically the kind of people who did that kind of stuff probably they've just kind of fucked it up. So, and again, it's mostly, you know, somebody who's going to lose it is because they did something else stupid, you know, I mean, so, you know, if there are, you know, owners of shady cars that have done something else, you know, you know, slamming drugs, doing something else. And, you know, there goes their car. And then, you know, that's going to kind of tie it all together. Although there are some things going on right now with, like, some guys out in Florida. There's a guy, like, Black Ops that has some shit going on. So there's always something.
And I feel like the Skyline is the most, you know, the most obvious.
Because it's the most desired car.
Yeah. And so. It's like the figurehead for the whole JDM kind of thing.
It is.
Right?
And R34 is, you know, and Fast and Furious and all the other shit.
I love the 34, dude. Everyone I've driven has been great.
I still much rather have the 32. I mean, I put lots of miles on the 34, you know,
What do you like better about the 32?
I just like it smaller and a little more raw.
Yeah.
It's just like, to me, that's the car. And the 34 just, you know, again, I put tons of miles on the OBD2 car we're working on and stuff, and I still much prefer to drive a 32.
That's cool.
So
I like the 6-speed. I do like the 6-speed, and I like I don't know. I just like the style better of the 34. I just like how it looks better. I think the driving experience in my experience is 85 to 90% the same.
Right.
Yeah. Not much different.
Not much. Yeah, and I mean we're like so far on these cars and the horsepower and the other things that they do, you know, people. But I'm like, you know,
what's the real sweet spot for you in Skyline horsepower, where you could a daily drivable pump gas, not a pain in the dick. What's the sweet spot?
450, 500.
I think 450 is a real good number.
You know, 450, 500 car gets down and it's good. It's, you know, I mean,
the drive line will handle that. Uh-huh. It's not a lot of, you don't have to reinforce a bunch of shit.
You know, you start to get third gear once you start to push them hard and stuff. So, I mean, there's fixes for everything. That's the thing about the Skyline. I mean, it's like supported like Mustang.
Yeah.
Right? So there's so much stuff available for Camaro, for Mustang. You know, there's so much aftermarket support for it. If you want to do something to some Mustang, you know, Fox Body Mustang, you want to put an LS in a Fox Body Mustang,
doable.
That is absolutely a kit available. You want to make it twin turbo, you want to do this, you want to do that, you want to supercharge, you want to blah, 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 you want to do all these parts.
The problems have been solved.
Right, so the Skyline, it's all there, too.
The one thing I wasn't able to do when I had my car.
Yep.
I actually took it for long. I didn't have it for long. I had it for about 8 months.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I thought it was less than that.
It might have been like 7. Yeah. But, you know, I didn't want to get rid of it. You know what happened? The reason I had to get rid of it is because my friend Roland owned this phenomenal building and enabled me by saying, but he owned this building in West LA. He kept a couple of his cars there. He moved to San Francisco, but he kept the building and he said, you take care of the building. Keep it clean. Keep it safe. You can keep your cars there. No charge.
Right.
No problem.
Right.
And that went on for like 2 years.
Right.
So I went from one car there to fucking five.
Right.
And then he went, just sold the building, bro. Got to clear it out. And I went, fuck. And I had to fire sale three cars, including that one.
Yeah.
And my friend, my now friend, Justin, he came down. I reviewed his car for a video.
Right.
And I drove the Skyline to the shoot.
Right.
And he fell in absolutely in love with it in first sight and bought it a week later.
Right.
I will buy another one, and when I do, it'll be from you. The one thing I couldn't, I took it to Fontana Nissan for service.
Yeah.
Actually, they service Skylines. They have a Skyline specialist there. But they could not fix the air conditioning.
Yeah, you know, air conditioning, pain in the ass. I have, but we've been fixing it.
Is there a fix now?
Yeah, I mean, it's just... air conditioning is probably one of the most complicated systems on a car.
Mm-hmm. But why? It's solvable in all these other cars. Why is this not? Why is this such a hard problem for the Skyline specifically?
No, it's not. It's the same. The system itself is the same as any other air conditioning system. It's just, you know, figuring out whatever part. Because it's a mechanical, hydraulic with gas, you know,
right,
system that...
So there's nothing strange about this.
No.
It's just the parts availability or
it's
diagnosis?
Just figuring it out.
Or,
yeah.
All right. Just, so maybe they just didn't want to
they
fuck
just,
with it.
You know, they're... so the biggest issues normally are... So you got the easiest ones are the sensors, right? So sensors go bad, sensors unplug.
Because it's like automatic, the automatic,
right. So outside sensor, inside sensor. So like even like... So in the... on the dash, there's an interior sensor. And sometimes when people change radio and stuff, they unplug that and they never plug it back in.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and then now it thinks it's like, you know, whatever, 900 degrees
or
minus 40 inside or something.
Yeah.
It's not going to turn the AC on. So, and then, you know, just in, so then you've got like actuators that actuate the doors, you know, and so then sometimes those things jam up too, and so
too
then
smart for its own good.
So you know, it's just like I said, it's really complicated system, and so the problem is that like you know, if you don't have somebody sit down and figure some of those things out, I mean, so there's a guy on the East Coast, there's another Sean actually, an East Coast Sean Kirby out there that he does a lot of stuff with AC and he I don't know.
I couldn't find him on Google.
But anyway, he does a lot of stuff with Skylines, and he's out there in Florida. He's worked a lot of crap out with them, and so again, 25-year-old car.
Yeah,
R12. So if you convert it to R134, then you know they're a little bit more pissed off because you know the compressor itself isn't really made for that. But you can, you know, the clutches go bad. And so then it'll pop fuses and stuff like that. And then, you know, just general leaks and things. So, I mean, we fight with a bunch of systems on cars. And we, you know, I had like five brand new AC compressors and I sold them all. So, and they were like $1,000 each.
So, yeah. The next Skyline I buy will have pre working.
Yeah.
I'm not going to try and buy the car and then solve it.
Yeah. It was kind of a pain in the ass. Like I said, it kind of gets to a point with it. So, but we've got them.
That's good.
Pretty good now.
I'm glad
so,
that's been
so.
Started.
Yeah.
For those of you listening live, jump into the super chat if you've got questions. Yeah. We're going to get there in like 5-10 minutes. Yeah. And I can already see there's a bunch going on. But what else did I want to ask you? 34. Oh, so it's other than
the Skyline, what other cars?
Other than the Skyline, what else? What other sports cars are really looking good out of Japan right now?
Well, I mean,
is it worth buying a right-hand drive Supra or a right-hand drive NSX or any of that kind of stuff? Or
I mean, we've got some Supras.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we sold a few NSXs, but the prices have really pushed up.
Yeah.
I mean, so actually, there was one of our customers' cars was just on Super Street, featured Super Street yesterday.
Oh, cool.
So, and I like the NSX, and
I do
you know,
too.
I mean, they. You know, when they came out, I mean, because I drove them actually when they're brand new. We, strange as it sounds, we sent the Acura NSXs to Japan because, you know, they were left-hand drive and Honda and all that stuff. And so I drove them when they were brand new. And then I was like, you know, I mean, it was cool. I mean, it was a nice car, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't anything special. And then when I drove the ones that we had, you know, recently, I was like, man, these are actually a really good car.
They're lovely, aren't they?
They're a really nice car to drive. And
they're just built really well. I mean, just tight.
Like, I mean, the shifting and, you know, the clutch, like everything else. And
I
and
love
then,
the view out of right, the windshield. Exactly. It's spectacular.
Right. And so and we had a couple with titanium exhaust. Fucking A, they sound good. Oh, man, they sound good.
My favorite, I drove like an O2 that had a 6-speed, and it had a nice coilover setup, nothing crazy, but it had a shortened final drive, and it was fucking rad. Yeah, it was so nice.
Yeah, we had a 3-liter with a 6-speed in it, and we had a 3.2 in another car.
Yeah, so the 3.2 was the second-gen engine.
Yeah, so, I mean... But
they're great cars. They're built so well that you can drive them, and they're nice. They're not like super fast, but they are really rewarding to drive.
Yeah, they're just like I said. It's just nice to drive. Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said after years and then getting back in it, I was like, man, I like this thing. So, you know, we've got Supras, you know, 6-speed twin turbo cars. I mean, they're pretty expensive.
What is the discount for a right-hand drive Supra versus a U.S. spec Supra?
Maybe 20.
20%? 20,000 or 20%?
20 grand. 20 grand. 10, 20 grand. I mean, it depends on, like, the condition. You know, I mean, because sometimes we're looking at, like, the condition and the mileage and stuff on some of our cars.
I was just, for hypothetical, I would say just call it two identical cars except the steering wheel's on the other side.
Yeah. So, I mean, so some people, of course, right-hand drive, I don't want it. I'm never going to have it. This is stupid. You know, what the hell, blah, blah, blah. Other guys... You know, something kind of cool and different.
I think right-hand drive is a fun novelty, actually. If Skylines did come in left-hand drive, I probably would look for one of those. But I thought it was a fun game.
I thought
it was enjoyable.
You know, that's just the way they are.
Yeah.
I mean, some people ask about, you know, left-hand drive, and, you know, I've heard all
that. Have you ever converted one?
Yes.
You have? Oh, my God.
So,
holy shit.
Not me, but, one of my old, old friend, he had a, this guy, Henry Halanto. I knew him for Cyclone Typhoon stuff, and he made a left-hand drive R32 years ago. And then there was a guy, Alexander, he made a left-hand drive R33. And so Alexander also actually wrote a couple books about Skylines, and he was a big R33 guy. Alexander Gorgi. So
how do you spell that?
Yeah, Alexander Gordg something. No, I don't know. With an I. Yeah.
Let's see what we can find. Nah. Gore?
No.
Alexander.
But if you go back to my blog and then put in Alexander, like GTR USA, and then put Alexander, you'll find him sooner.
I don't know.
Later.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Alexander.
But anyway, he made left-hand drive R33 and left-hand drive R34. And then, you know, there's been a couple other places have done it. And then Middle East, some guys have done it.
I found a couple images.
Yeah, that's.
Here's a car.
That's my,
hang on. Here's a car.
I drove that car. So.
And then here's a left-hand drive dashboard.
Yeah.
How about that? It can be done.
I mean, yeah, it's been done, but it's not...
not financially advisable.
It was weird to drive, actually, because of the bump in the floor, and so...
Oh, yeah, so the pedal box is all funky,
and there's
huh?
Alexander right there, so...
There you go.
But...
Good-looking car.
I mean, so you know, years ago, so I think actually there was something today they put out, like Sam Attani and Road and Track years ago, and they were like, you know, they couldn't import the Skyline to the U.S. because the driveshaft was in the way. It was what they used to say a long time ago. The fucking driveshaft is on the right side.
So what was in the way? It was just the pedals?
Just a bullshit excuse, I think. I mean, because the prop shaft, the front-wheel drive, shaft is actually underneath the driver's seat.
Oh.
So weird. Underneath on the right side. So I remember reading it and just being like now, like later on, being like, this is bullshit. I mean, this is a fucking excuse on why they never brought it to the U.S. They never brought it to the U.S. probably because they thought it was a little too much car.
Too heady?
Too complicated?
Yeah.
For the white people? Hakugen?
They gave us the 300ZX. That's the same.
We got the Z, yeah. So, I mean, and we, you know, all the other... BS cars, but so I mean, we've got R33 GTSs right now, you know, you've got some of the other, you know, oddball Toyotas and stuff, but man, R32 is just still
the one.
It's still people looking for it, people buying them, people, the prices in Japan are high and they just don't seem to be going down. And some people will say, well, when the R33 gets legal, is it going to go down? And I'm like, man, there's a third of the number of R33s as there were of R32s. And the thing is that, you know, you're fighting against the whole entire world. You know,
it's a global market.
Right.
Now.
And there's guys in Japan that won't sell their car.
Yeah.
You know,
what do you think about Canada?
Oh, man, Canada has some shit up there, man.
You don't want to buy a car out of Canada? Just
because they just, you know, the problem with a lot of the Canadian stuff is that, like, Canadians are our redneck northern, you know, cousins.
Yeah.
Right. So the thing is, like, a lot, you know, I mean, they a lot of them, you know, they treated them like a Honda Civic.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's fair. They don't treat them like a collector car.
They don't. I mean, and a lot of people say, well, it's not a collector car. It's just a car, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then, you know, now later on down the line, when you're looking to buy one, do you want one that somebody treated like shit?
No, I don't.
They have real winter. They have real snow. They have real, you know, and you have a lot of guys up there that just, you know, basically didn't treat them. I mean, has all the cheapest eBay parts on it. I mean, you know, I mean, when I see that car, I'm not interested. I mean, I bought a few from Canada. I
didn't work out.
I just don't want to buy any more from Canada. Right. I mean, you know, I'd rather buy them from Japan. I mean, you know, you occasionally have some fucked up shit from Japan. I mean, the wiring is awful generally, but, you know, you look at, you know, you have, you know, cars with navigation and all this other shit and, like, wires everywhere all fucking scotch locked together and stuff. And, I mean, you're like, man, this is bad. I mean, as I said, I was a guest or an electrician, and you look at all this crap, and you're like, holy fuck, man. They're like, what the hell is going on? Like, you know, wires on wires on wires, you know, scotch lock on a scotch lock on a scotch lock. Like, holy shit, you know, this is bad. But, you know, I mean, we try to, you know, fix that stuff before, you know, I mean, that's what we're trying to do with some of those cars. But like I said, the, you know, when you start to get into the rust and the, you know, cars that haven't been maintained and taken care of versus ones that have. So, because now the problem is that, you know, even the crappy cars are kind of expensive.
What's the minimum to get into, like,
right now, like 30.
Fuck, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, you know what you paid for yours, which was on the low end, but
you gave me a great deal.
But right now, like, 30 is about as low as I sell them.
And that's for, like, a blah car?
Yeah, that's for a blah car. So I have, I mean,
fuck, I should have held.
Yeah. So I sold a really nice black low mileage one that was really, really nice. It was like 24,000 mile car, but it was like perfect.
And what does that go for?
48.
Well, that's not that bad.
So
it's not that bad. It's not 80.
Yeah, and then I just sold probably the most expensive California. So we're doing a car for Cali that's going to end up being 70.
Wow. It's a 32?
Uh-huh.
Damn.
So, I mean, you know, of course, there's guys out there that sell them, you know, sell some stuff for, you know, less. And there's some cheap pieces of shit out there. And, you know, some guys are like, oh, it's, you know, 20. I couldn't sell it for 20. And I'm like, well,
it probably is fucked.
You know, maybe it's you. You know, I don't know. I mean, I can sell cars. You know, I mean, we try to do, you know, and it, even since you bought your car, like, I kind of changed a lot of what we do, you know, as far as going over the cars and, you know, working on stuff in Japan before it gets here. And then even, again, back to the AC stuff. And even once it gets here, you know, we're kind of gone through a lot more, like, stringent checks on stuff. Mm-hmm. Because in the beginning, I was just kind of bringing them and sending them, you know.
Yeah.
So, and now it's like, you know, we have the ability
to protect.
We have the ability to, you know, I mean, we got a shitload of cars, though. I mean, you see what's on the website.
On the inventory.
That's not even.
Again,
that's not even
the beginning. Importavehicle.com. There are plenty of cars.
There are so many more cars than there are on there. So we have about 60 or 70 cars, and there's whatever's on there. But
I like this. All right. Pulsar, GTIR versus Starlet. Ooh.
I mean, GTIR all day.
Pulsar GTIR?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
That's a fucking rad little bitch right there.
SR20 all-wheel drive.
That's kick ass. How much do you want for this thing? 18 grand? It's all right.
Yeah. So they're
all right.
I mean, the Pulsars, you know, the parts of the Pulsars are a bit harder.
Yeah.
So, you know, the same deal. They're not as appreciated as some of the other stuff. So, you know, you're going to have, you know, and this is auto.
It's an automatic.
Yeah, but we have another one too. So, but
Starlets are pretty cool.
I mean, what's turbo. It makes all kinds of interesting sounds and shit.
So. What are your thoughts if you want to buy a Skyline and yep. you are concerned with the long term value of that car? Keep it stock. Is that or can you modify and still preserve value?
I mean, what I'm doing right now, you know, I mean, we can modify them a little and still preserve value. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're using high-end stuff, you're fine. But if you're using cheap shit, then, you know, I mean.
So would you recommend if you've got a 32 to go with the steel turbos instead of the ceramic? And the,
I mean, most people, you're never going to even see that. So, I mean, I don't think that makes any difference. So, I mean, it's inside and it's something that's more a reliability thing.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, you never would know if you open the hood.
You wouldn't know what it's got.
There's no way you could tell. I couldn't tell you until I take the downpipe off, and even then I need a flashlight and a mirror in order to be able to see it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's something that's, you know, to me it's a reliability thing. It's no problem. So, but then if you start to get into, like, you know, single turbo and you're you know, doing, like, a lot of other weird things and stuff, I mean, maybe, you know, to the right person, you mm-hmm. know, it's interesting, but, you know, you start to get, I mean, so, like, we had a car, you know, one we used on Top Gear Top Gear America.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's 6-speed, so I had 6-speed in it, T37s, gunmetal car, you know, I mean, that's kind
nice
of,
car. That's standard.
It's kind of
standard.
Like, you know, I mean, those are got kind of some desirable things on it, you know, so, to most customers, it's worth, you know, a little bit more than a completely stock car.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
I mean, we've had a few. I mean, you can see if you look in sold cars with
inventory sold. Let's look at some sold cars
You can scroll
lots
down.
Of Skylines.
Yep.
Lots of Skylines.
Yep.
Wow, really a lot. That's a kick-ass little CRX you got going on there,
that's
too.
That's in California right now.
Oh, yeah?
Yep, so.
Someone's smogging carving uh-huh. a CRX? Uh-huh. Jesus Christ.
I did a couple cappuccinos for California. I see the Evo 1.
Oh, Evo 1, cool.
With the sticker.
With the livery on it?
Yeah, I mean, that one was, like, kind of strange. And
that's pretty rad, man. I like that thing. That's cool.
You know, I was like, man, we got to peel all those stickers off. And then when I got it, I was like, you know,
yeah,
I
right.
actually don't mind it. It was actually okay. So
it's clear Skylines are your bread and butter.
They are.
That's really what's
that
all
is,
going on here.
I mean, we got RX-7s, we got Aristos, we got blah, blah, blah. But, man, you know, we get some people asking for some other, you know, like AE86s. But, man, those fucking cars are like 20 grand in Japan. Yeah. It's like, do you really, I mean, by the time I buy it, I bring it.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to make
really
going to
spend 30 grand
right.
on a Corolla.
Yeah. So, I mean, I had somebody recently that sent me one. And I don't think they realized what the price was on it. And I said to him, I said, you know, this car is like 28 grand, right? Before I touch it. And so.
Did he run away then at that point?
Yeah, I hadn't heard back, you know? So I don't think they realized what the, you know, what the yen value was on it to what it is in the U.S. I mean, they're
but
just.
But if someone understands the price, will you go get them something?
I'll get them everything.
Anything you want. What about stuff out of Europe? Are you fucking with that stuff at all? Like Delta Integrale?
I should be,
like
but I'm not. I mean, actually, you can get those in Japan. There's actually quite a lot of them there.
Well, it's very interesting. And I just watched, you know, Bring a Trailer. The Porsches, the yep. Integrales, the mm-hmm. Alpina BMWs from the 80s.
Right.
That stuff is coming out of Japan right now.
Yes.
It's a good time to, is it a good time to buy?
Because they had a lot of European stuff over there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, like I said, we shipped a bunch of things in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s and that to there. And then they got after the Americans and some of the other weird things, they did get quite a lot of European cars. And even right now, they're European car. Is what they're interested in the most, more than American stuff. But you know, the Japanese cars, the Skylines, are so I'm so busy with them, although I do have maybe 7 Defender 90s. But
oh really? I fucking hate Defenders, but blame anyone who wants to make a buck off them.
Yaska, you know, my business partner, he loves them. man.
I think they're junk.
They're awful.
They're awful.
I'm like, man. Totally. I'm like,
the worst.
Man, there was one that just sold up at fucking Monterey. This Defender 90, a US one, 7,500 miles or something.
Yeah.
Sold for like 160 grand.
Fuck that sideways.
160. No. I'm like, are you? I mean, it's
160 grand. You buy a brand new G Wagon. Call it a day.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even. You know,
I'm not a fan of the G Wagon, but if you want to spend 160 grand on a boxy SUV,
right.
A 97 Defender is not the way to do it.
Anyway, I don't want to give away too much. Sometimes it's like, you know, some competitors listening, so I may not, you know, I may not be completely.
Don't show your cards.
We sold the one, and we sold some other stuff and some other things that are interesting, but.
But it's Skylines. Skylines pay the mortgage.
I mean, there's other cars in other parts of the world that I just haven't gotten around. I mean, some of the more interesting Holdens and Fords and some of that. I mean, from Australia because
time to go visit grandma.
You know, because they've been dead for years, so it doesn't really. But my parents lived there for 8 years actually in Gold Coast and like Brisbane area, but you know, there's some cool car. Like, again, there's lots of cool cars around the world. Mm. It's just, you know, sometimes it's a matter of like time, space, money, you know? Yeah. So, and I mean, like I said, we've got, you know, you see what's on the site, but we've got, you know, I've got another 30 or 40 cars that I'm trying to prep, get ready to sell, you know, that's still there and stuff that's in Japan and coming and all those kinds of things. And so you always have to, you know, like anything, you know, you don't have unlimited money, unlimited time, unlimited anything. So, I mean, you know, we're pretty good, but we're not, you know, I mean, it's so, I'd love to bring in some more Ferraris and I mean, there's some cool shit that, you know, I mean, I know we sent to Japan and so even just from there. And then there's, you said all the different, Land Rovers, Range Rovers, and then there's, other, you know, like you said, Lancias and things, but you know, then you get down to some of the support.
Yeah, for some of those cars. Parts and
some of the Lancias. And
the
things,
so. The one that I have, my guilty pleasure, I think, as far as for a non-Skyline Japanese car, is a Pajero Evo. That's my I've never driven one, but something about it is very appealing.
Yeah, no, those are cool.
You ever drive one?
No.
You ever really?
I know what it is, but I've never driven one. No,
I would love to have a go in one. It seems it's like a fucking Suzuki Sidekick with an Evo drivetrain in it. Yeah. That sounds kind of awesome. Also, kind of terrible.
Yeah. See, there's one thing I want to mention and I don't want to mention it, which is
mention it, please.
So Stagia 260 RS,
which is what?
I'll look it up.
Is that the wagon? Yeah, that's the Skyline wagon,
260
right?
260 RS.
Oops, sorry. Yeah. Isn't that the Skyline wagon?
Mm.
That's the shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Oh, look at that. You know, see.
So there are. So a 260 RS is R33 drivetrain.
Oh, GTR or GTR. GTSC?
Oh. Well, there were GTS. There's, so the 260 is 2.6 liter. So that's what
it
is.
Oh, yeah, right. There you go. Yeah.
So, but I mean, they're 96, 97, 90. Yeah, I think I think they're 97. I forget exactly.
Can
I mean,
you, got so many. And you can make a GTR front end on this,
some people,
right?
Yeah,
some people do it. Yeah,
yeah,
see, that's the one that, it looks way better. I mean, even though it's
I don't care about the front end. I care about the drivetrain underneath.
I do too, but it just looks better this way. Yeah, Skyline wagon is awesome.
Yeah. So I mean, like, so here's one with like TEs on it, and you know,
it is cool, but it's a little bit Subaru Forester looking, little first gen Forester.
Yeah. I mean, I like the box. It's cool, and I the drivetrain is what you know is appealing.
You.
So
I like this thing. This one with the wheels.
Nismo wheels. And so you know, there's four door. There's actually a four door GTR R33.
That's pretty cool.
And so I mean, and it just like some of those, like I said, oddball stuff. So that's you know, the 260 RS is, you know.
That's rad. Let's go to some of these Super Chat questions and finish off the show. We got a bunch. Let's see. Let's start. Abel Lopez. R34s are properly expensive right now. Which import do you think will be the next big thing? R34s.
R34s would be, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, the thing is that that people who are going to want them are going to pay for them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, there's, you know, when we start to talk about money and availability of money and where money is in the world and all those other kinds of things and desirability, you know, we're starting to get into, you know, people around our age and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you may not be... You know, you may not be that guy for the 69 Camaro. I mean, you may like it and you be into it, or 67 Mustang. Like, that may be a cool car, but that's not where you're going to spend your money.
Yeah.
You know, guys who are more in their 35, 40, you know, early 40s range, or, you know, by the time these cars get legal in the 50 range, you know, they're going to maybe buy the 34 over their 69 Camaro.
Totally.
Because that's what they want. If they have, they're going to spend money. So
I think there's not enough of them cars,
yes.
And there are more than enough rich people globally to buy up all the good ones at a very high price.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, people complain about it, but that's, I mean, the truth is that, you know, whatever, there's fucking however many billionaires here in LA or something, you know, there's 7,000 billionaires or something, you know, and you're like, okay, well then, you know, I mean, there's 11,000 of these cars worldwide. I mean, like I said, obviously not everybody wants them, but
and some of them are not worth buying. Some of them are trashed.
And some of them have already been cut in half and are done. You know, a lot of them are. And there's stuff in the world that people can't buy. You can't buy it. You just won't be able to buy it.
Yeah, like I would like to have a DB4 GT Zagato. Tough shit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's stuff that's available. And so, I mean, R33 GTR, R34 GTR, and then...
the Skyline, you think, will always lead the Japanese car importing
scene. You know, it's the car I deal with the most, and so then, you know, you'd think it's a bit biased, but man, looking at all the insights, all the things that I see, all the, you know, I mean, I look at all the data, and that's where it is.
That's what people want.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Abel. Yeah. Ashton says, do you think if they added power to the 86 platform, the current one, it would boost sales substantially, or would it ruin the character of the car? You ever drive a forced induction 86, a new one?
I have... So I've worked on, so we had World Challenge car. We had so, you know, I've done actually quite a bit of work for Toyota, for Scion Toyota in the past. So with one of my friends, you know, besides doing what I do, like one of my friends has a marketing company, work pretty close with Toyota, and so we ran the TMG car, TMG Cup car in World Challenge in November 2017. So the TNG Cup car, yeah. So you're going to see it's a red and white car. So, yeah, you'll see it. But
I'll find it.
Yeah, see, there's me, actually, if you...
Oh, it's a good-looking car.
I had a beard and stuff, so that's up at Willow up during testing and stuff. But, yeah, crap, photo.
Sorry about the shitty photo.
I clicked large.
Large.
Okay, well, whatever.
Because they
made us remove the wing anyway. So we had to race it without the wing. So Craig stand drove it and stuff. So
I like Craig.
I don't know if I've actually driven a. I've got friends with them, and I'm just trying to think if I've actually driven one with any kind of forced induction. I don't think I have.
I've driven a turbo one by Crawford, which made way too much power,
right?
And it was angry.
Yeah.
And I drove one that had a Rotrex on it, and it made about 290 at the wheels,
right.
And it was aces,
right?
Aces all around. And I mean, I don't know if they offered an STI version of the 86, would it boost sales? I think they'd sell some.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I don't think it would ruin the character of the car. I think it was very nice to drive force induction.
I mean, how much more money would it cost, and how many people buy those based on the number?
Are you going to spend $40,000 on a BRZ
right.
that's got a turbo on it?
Don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, are they? I mean, I've driven the celebrity cars too. We did a thing with the celebrity cars. Oh, man, they're pretty fucking doggy slow.
Weren't they? Oh, the stock ones? Yeah, they're the stock
with a cage and
terrible.
Stuff. With a cage
with extra weight.
Yeah,
that stock engine stinks.
Yeah, so, like I said, I helped out with a English TV show where they're doing. And we did some stuff in downtown LA across some convention center, and they like drove Gymkhana around in there. And so, but you know, I it's like, man, it's not very fast car.
No, it's not.
So.
I mean, I think they'd sell some. You know, a bunch of people would buy them.
But again, the price, man. People buy on price, and if like you said, if it's 40 grand,
they might lose people at 40.
They're not going to, you know, if 35, yeah. You know, whatever. So
thanks, Ashton. Kezhang fan says, what do we think of Range Rover Sport build quality today? Do you have an opinion on Range Rover Sport?
So my in-laws have several Range Rovers.
Current-ish generation ones?
Yeah, a few years old and stuff. So I think they have a Sport. I mean, you know, those cars, like, inside and, you know, they live in Virginia and horse country and stuff over there. Inside and like, you know, the overall luxury is very nice.
Yeah.
But, man, when your lease is up or after 2 years, you better jettison that motherfucker, dude, because you don't want to have to deal. I mean, because they had a – I drove a supercharged one from Virginia down to Florida, and that it would just, like, randomly fucking cut off, like, driving, you know? Like, it had some problems, you know? And then, you know, used. I mean, because, again, a used car dealer forever. Dude, you get – whenever you get into, like, an older used Range Rover – every light on the fucking dash is on, like the air suspension, check engine, you know, like, and like everything, it's a fucking Christmas tree inside. I mean, as far as a, you know, a limited, like if you bought one because you have a lot of money and you can turn around and you can jettison it after 2 or 3 years or whatever it might be, you are fine. If you are buying a 3 year old used one, man,
good luck.
You know, I'm afraid of them. So.
I think the newest ones are better than they've ever been, and I think the fit and finish of them is good.
And
the drivetrains are fairly stout. You're not going to blow an engine up. It's at least I don't think so. But yeah, electronics, air suspensions. You know, lease it or get an extended warranty. That's my angle on that one. Yeah. All right, would I ever consider doing another Rally North America event? I started doing these rallies after service. I love the guys who run Rally North America. It's a lovely event full of lovely people. I spend way too much of my life in cars, and the idea of driving on an event recreationally to me is just, it's not happening. They run a great event, but they hired me. They paid me to be there to make videos of that event. And
time, you know, I mean,
so
I said,
money.
I work on, I was actually going to be headed to NASA Nationals, which is going on, but man, I just, you know, I said again, working with my friend, and you know, they're going to be out there supporting like 20 different racers out there, and for DG Spec, and you know, it's just, you know, when you get into some of that, again, it's just time, man. And you just, if you're serious about it and you're actually doing it correctly, which if I'm doing it, I'm doing it seriously, then you're spending 10 times the amount of time off the track prepping the car and working on it than you are on the track or on the event. Yeah. And that's what you have to do to be serious, which means you either got to pay somebody to do it, or you got to like not
or
have
get
a fucking
under the
life,
car,
right? Yeah, you know,
all
I mean,
weekend, no.
Right? And I mean, all weekend, you know.
For me, I'm very spoiled. I make a living doing car shit.
Right.
The idea of spending my own time and money doing car shit, it's just not going to happen. The only thing I spend money on regards to cars is racing. I buy a seat in an endurance race car.
Yeah.
I fly in, I show up, I race, and I go
home. That's probably the best way
to
do it. Yeah, it's the same thing with rally, you know. So
if you're in Ohio, come see me in mid-Ohio at the end of October. I will be racing there with Road and Track. R. Beloy, thank you for your donation. Greg Howard, is there a car, a U.S. car, that other countries have imported with similar enthusiasm as we have the Skyline, an American car? What do you export a lot of to other countries that people enthusiastically want?
Well, I mean, again, to Australia and stuff, Camaros and Mustangs, because they never had them. And so, you know, a lot of the stuff that was in movies that was just never sold in those places,
like 69 Mustang from Bullitt, 68 Mustang from Bullitt, and that kind of shit.
Yeah, just and you know, Mustangs in general, just Mustangs and Camaros in general. And so the thing is, I mean, I don't want to get too deep into this whole subject, but basically, they just want a Mustang or they just want a Camaro. Like they don't know anything necessarily about them.
Yeah,
and so you know, there's 6-cylinder Camaros, Mustangs. There's cheaper, shittier, you know, and then there's, you know, but a lot of those, I don't want to necessarily mean this badly, but they're uneducated about those cars. And it's the same even with Skylines. Like, to me, they're Skylines, but they're GTRs. You bought a GTR. You didn't buy a Skyline.
A GTST.
You didn't buy one of the other Skylines. You bought a GTR because you wanted a GTR.
Yeah.
To me, like, and I mean, I always give guys shit about this, and they always give me shit back about it, which is, you know, to me, there is only GTR.
The rest are just sort of
filler. I don't even basically pay attention to them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I sell them, and, you know.
Do people ask you for GTSTs?
I mean, we have them. I mean, I mean, we sell them and all that stuff. I've obviously had to change my view slightly. But before, like at Motorex and stuff, it didn't make any sense because the cost to bring the car into compliance was the same GTR or GTST. And so, you know, so now you have a, you know, whatever base you start with, it didn't matter because the rest of the cost was there. So, but getting back to Mustangs and Camaros and cars like that, which is, you know, again, you can still find a 65 Mustang here in LA with a six cylinder and automatic transmission for $4,000 or $5,000 or something like that. But then, you know, if you're now into 67 Fastback, Shelby $200,000 car, and like those, they don't understand, you know, so then if it, you know, basically if somebody sees that $200,000 car, but that 65 isn't worth that because that's not that
car.
And some people, you know, they don't have problems.
Conflate the,
they have
the
problems
range.
Putting that stuff together, and even the same kind of things on some of the Skylines, they have problems putting together. I mean, but so, you know, the four-door GTSTs, you know, with a 20 or R33 with a 25, you know, they're fine. They're, you know, I mean, people drift them, people do other stuff with them, and there's all-wheel drive versions and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, to me, it's just GTR.
It's the GTR. Yeah. Yeah. So. I drove a GTST once, and the dude paid like $10,000 for it. And I go, you know, for $10,000, this is a fun car.
Yeah. I mean, we sold them. I mean,
it's a fun car for $10,000 for sure. So. Rear-wheel drive, turbo, nice slick engine. Like, it was fun. Yeah. It was cool.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, the inline six. And, and a lot of guys, oh, I'm going to put a 26. And then, I mean, I've had some, you know, I mean, I've sold them before, not real recently, but I mean, I've sold them for, you know, $6,000 or $7,000 for, because there's some, you know, there's 13 different versions of R32.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a 1.8 liter automatic four-door.
Is there really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's like some shitty ass for, that's why I say like GTR.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean,
I guess if you want a shell for something, okay. But
I mean, people put, you know, other engines and crap in. So,
thank you. Sam Craig says, do I get sick of people asking for advice on buying cars they probably can't afford and people trying to big note themselves? No. What this show is about. I don't, you ask advice, I'll give it. I don't check your bank account first. But he's from Australia.
I see.
Thank you, Sam. Yep. Andrew Jackson, in my opinion, what car drove better? The JZX100 Chaser I drove in New Zealand. Toyota Chaser, neat little car.
Yep.
Basically a four-door Supra that sort of has the body of a Camry, but the interior of a Lexus. It was very interesting. Do you have one?
No, just looking at our regular inventory. Oh. Go back up to current inventory.
Do you have a Chaser?
I don't have a 100, but I have a...
Oh, here's the tour. Yeah, okay, perfect. Here's a Chaser.
This is a 1J car. But then, I mean, we have some wrist. This is a manual, and it's kind of a weird like drift car deal.
It's got
like
a body kit.
Yeah, but if you look like, you know what, like Aristos and stuff. But those are all auto. But they're so if we go back, you know, to current inventory. So then you've
Aristo.
Got
here's an Aristo.
There's Aristo.
Aristo is basically a first gen GS300.
Yes, but. But originally, you know, original 2J, twin turbo.
Oh. So an automatic.
They're all auto. But you know, this car like this, you know, I mean, an original 2J is always going to be better than a swapped car. You know, swapped cars always have fucking problems.
Right.
You
yeah.
know
yeah.
I mean, you know, no matter.
This thing's rad, dude. This 92 Aristo for 10 Gs is rad.
I think I got 4 or 5 of them.
Really?
Yeah.
It's pretty, dude. For 160,000 miles, this thing looks clean too.
It's
these things hold up pretty well.
I mean, yeah. I mean, they're
Japanese from the 90s. Lexus.
They're Lexus GS. So the good part about this car is that it's available. Anyway, we're back to the JZX. Your question on the 100 and the 32.
The Chaser, the R32 GTR, or FDRX7. What do you think for driving enjoyment? You're going to go with GTR, obviously, right?
Yeah, I'm a GTR.
Me
guy,
too.
So I can't really. But I mean the Chaser had. I mean. Four doors and
the Chaser's rad. It
was, you know, four doors, manual trans, all that stuff. RX-7s, man, I never have gotten into RX-7s.
I've driven one that was like the perfect build,
yeah,
and it was great. Mm. And all the other ones I've driven, I'm like, don't really care.
Yeah, so we've had tons of them. You know, the guys that love them,
yeah.
You know, they can do a lot of stuff.
You have to love a rotary.
You know, they can do a lot of stuff. I mean, my brother-in-law has a really modified one, and but it's just not me, man.
I feel you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Andrew. Amin wants to know, looking for a 2011 E92 M3, what should I be cautious about besides rod-bearing issue? That's the big one, the rod-bearing. You know anything about those cars, the V8 M3s?
Not the V8s.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I mean, really just like overall care and maintenance, you know, does it look like a car that's had the shit beat out of it? Yeah. And the rod bearing thing is the big one, because an engine replacement is so much money for one of those cars.
And my wife had a E46 M3
yeah.
when I met her.
They're lovely.
SMG car.
They're
SMG
nice
was
car.
Weird.
SMG's not I good, but the really M3s, like I wasn't going to shit in your wife's car, but SMG stinks.
Yeah.
These, the 2011s that. Had the dual clutch. Which is much, much better.
Right. Yeah. So.
Rod bearing's the big one, dude. I don't have a lot of other specifics, general condition and rod bearings.
Shouldn't the internet be able to tell him?
Yeah, but he wants Googles? To hear it. They want
okay, he want to hear from you. Okay,
yeah, I just right. I don't have a lot of those technical answers for specific
okay.
models. I'm sorry. If you ask me about what to look for in a car I fucking own, that's one thing, but I don't have right. much there. I'm sorry. All
right. What manual turbo sedan?
Sean, what manual turbo sedan should we consider if we can't afford a minty Skyline GTR? I'm currently drooling over the Chaser you have for sale.
I mean, sedans is, you know, so there's all the Skyline sedans. So, I mean, we have, let's say, 32, 33... GTSTs, and then I mean the other stuff is auto though.
Yeah, what about a Nissan Gloria?
No, see no? all that
that's
shit's
auto
all,
shit.
All gonna be auto. So I mean, so this is so the so like this the, so this 32.
There's a 32
that's
GTST.
Manual.
Yeah, there's $15,000.
Yep.
Yeah, this thing looks clean. 58,000 miles.
Yeah, it's nice.
Looks nice.
So
good color, good interior. Yeah. No dash bubble.
No, it does have.
Oh, it does have a dash bubble. Yeah, I can't see it from my angle.
Yep.
Oh, there it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
this one's pretty solid. $16,000. That's fun.
So the 2-liter turbo rear wheel drive, you know, manual transmission. They're all right. So,
oh, I'm sorry, I didn't bring the picture over for the folks. Well, here it is, 91 GTST, $16,000.
So and then we, but other than that. I said I'm not really. I mean, a lot of the other crap is all auto,
automatic. Yeah.
So I mean,
so
that's
really
kind of
Chaser
the way,
or GTST 4-door.
Yeah. What else could we possibly think about? That
I mean, you can also there's also like the American swap. Stuff. I mean, you can get an STI or an Evo.
Right.
Oh, yeah. The Evos.
Yeah.
You have the Evos.
Evo. Actually, I do have WRX.
Oh, you have a JDM one.
Uh huh.
Oh, like an old one.
Uh huh. So.
Oh, really?
Wait, I think it's sold.
Like a 2-door.
No, there's not until 95.
Oh, shit, that's true, yeah.
So, maybe it's in there. It's sold, so
no,
maybe...
It don't exist.
It does. It's in sold inventory. No. But I had a couple of WRXs.
Oh, here's a US. Yeah.
No, that's a US one. Fuck, I don't know. I saw it. I saw one over here.
Where'd it
go? Fuck, I don't know. There it goes. There's one.
Oh, here it is.
There's both of them.
A 93 WRX. Yeah.
So the interior is kind of like interesting. You see like the whatever, I think tiger print.
Oh, there. Yeah. Look at that.
So the you know, again, these are, you know, a little bit just different like materials and different, you know, than a US car. So, I mean, some people, you know, again, just looking for something a little different than what was available. The Evos, there's just not that many.
Yeah.
There's just not that many. I mean, we've been trying to.
You weren't right. fucking around with this tiger print. That's
no, it's nice. The seats are nice too. Actually, they're pretty supportive.
Got good bolstering,
right?
Good lateral,
yeah.
A Nardi wheel.
I think there's one of them. The wheel was original. Somebody had told me. I mean, I didn't. You know, there was like a Nardi package
that's
or something,
cool.
or Momo or something. So.
Neat. All right, yeah. So you can definitely get an old WRX as well. Cool.
Yep.
Oh, a couple of people are offended by your Canada things. Canadians offended by calling them rednecks.
Syrup embargo. Yeah,
syrup embargo.
Fuck Canada.
Mike says, Sean, thank you for the help and info on the Skyline Owners Facebook page. What car is the best value in a JDM daily driver?
I mean, I would say something like the Aristo.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, you're... Say you're like $10,000 into it, and the thing will fucking last forever, and the parts are available. You know, the problem with like daily, you know,
can
some
you,
guys
can you put Lexus parts in this, or do you have to get the Japanese spec shit?
Are you can put Lexus? I mean, you can put Lexus stuff in it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be some obviously, you know, unique bits and pieces, but man, a lot of the like windshields and stuff. I mean, glass and
yeah.
other things are easy. Whereas, yeah. you know, there's guys out here that. even since the MotorX days, guys who daily drive their Skyline, I'm like, man, I'm not worried about the car. I'm worried about other fuckers hitting you.
Yeah.
And it's happened. Like here in LA, like I have two guys that I know here in LA have been hit in their Skylines.
Oh, it
happens quite a bit, like throughout, you know, because I'm on a bunch of groups, owners.
Yeah, yeah.
And it happens, man. Guys are, you know, sitting at a fucking light and somebody backs into him or something. Oh, I did have that happen to me. I almost killed somebody.
Sucks.
So
what about, you know what I think is a lot of value? I think the Celsiors, because you get a real nice Celsior for a lot of money and it'll last a long, for not a lot of money.
Not a lot. Yeah, and you got where is your car?
My LS?
Yeah.
I'm picking it up tomorrow morning from what in theory should be its last service under my tenure.
How many miles does it have on it?
989,000.
Dude, you got to get that extra 11. You got like...
Oh, no, it's getting there. I'm taking it to a million.
Okay.
But I mean last major service. So I just had the rear lower control arms replaced. They were rusted.
Okay.
All the suspension bushings.
Mm-hmm.
Brake pads and rotors, brake fluid, oil and filter change, and there's a differential bushing as well.
Okay.
And it's $2,800.
All right.
I bought the car for $1,200. I put $15 into it to get it 100,000 miles. You know what? The marketing value is good, though. But a Toyota Celsior is the Japanese version of the LS400.
Yeah.
And
but you see, so that's a V8.
Yes, the 1UZ.
But the Aristo is 2JZ.
Oh, no, I know. But I'm just talking about, he said best value in a JDM daily driver.
But you see, so to me, then when you're done with the Aristo, you pull the engine out, and you should probably still get $5,000 for it.
That's a good point. That's a good point. There's value. That's why you see value.
Unless you really fuck it up. But I mean, you turn around and sell the 2J out of the car.
Good point, sir.
You know, so you run it into the ground, and if all the rest of the shit stops working, then
the motor is still worth something. So there you go. You see all the angles. I like that.
Yeah.
Awesome Opossum says, I used to see a white R34 around Cal Poly Pomona in 07-08. Was that you?
Probably.
All right. Solved. Thank
Probably.
You, sir.
Probably. Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. So, were there a lot of other white R34s running around?
No, but I drove one around
in that area?
In that time.
Could have been.
Yeah.
Thank you for your donation, Mike. And thank you for whoever gave us some New Zealand dollars and then retracted their message.
Okay.
Justin says, is the new WRX the Casio F91W of cars? What is that, like a generic watch? Is that, I don't know what the...
I don't know what that is either.
F91W? Yeah, is that the... Oh, well, yeah.
That's an old...
That's the basic Casio digital watch.
The
original.
Okay.
I'm not sure what you mean by that. I don't know. The WRX... just like general... I don't know. No. The WRXs are fun.
All-wheel drive
and turbo.
If you're talking like a, you know, an older, like a 96 Camry or something, But I think that, you know, plain and functional.
Mm.
I don't think the WRX is that. I think the WRX is way different than that. And a Impreza.
Maybe a base Impreza.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Like I think the Impreza XV Crosstrek thing is the Casio F91W of cars. Yeah. Thank you, Justin. And lastly, Mike wants to know, what is the best car to import to the U.S. from Europe or Asia that is over 25? The Defender, 993, 964.
I'm not telling you.
Well, best is so subjective. What does best mean?
What does best mean?
Best means the one you like the best.
Well, does it best so he can get money for it? So he can be competitor to me or what?
I mean...
You know, I mean...
Trying to start a business?
So trying to start a business, side hustle and shit or what?
Bro, no one's going to start a business today and catch up with you. You have too much knowledge. And experience for someone to start now and threaten your business.
You can always start now, I think. You know, I mean, I would say that before, but I mean, it's like, you know, we can look at this YouTube stuff, you know, and like, I mean, you've been on YouTube for a long time, and
yes.
There's guys who've come much later and, have some crazy ass following. How many subscribers do you have?
Me? 850.
Yeah.
It's a bunch.
It's a lot.
It's a bunch. I'm getting smoked by other people. I'm dead in the water as far as subscribers go now.
That's kind of the thing, right? So there always can be somebody else that comes along.
Yeah.
I mean, you're probably not controversial or lighting your hair on fire or not young enough. No. Actually, you're not young enough.
I'm not offensive enough.
Probably.
To grow, yeah.
So you're not like doing all the stupidest shit you could possibly do. So, I mean, we just sold some cars to a bunch of YouTube guys, different people, different stuff. So, you know, we sold a Supra, we sold a couple of R32s, R32 and stuff. And so, you know, I mean, their format is much different. Like you have like this, to me, like a nice polished format. You're talking about cars, you're doing your thing, when you're, you know, and you're doing even like a one take and you're talking about cars and stuff. But, you know, to them, you know, what's popular within that demographic is like holding the camera and talking to it and walking around.
It's a vloggy thing. There's people, you know, I have a show.
Yes.
And then I go home to my life.
Right.
And they are not the same thing.
Right.
But the younger you go, the more integrated show and life become.
Right.
And I don't find that interesting at all because I don't even give a shit about a celebrity's life. You know what I mean? I want to see Tom Cruise act in a movie. Right. I don't give a fuck about his.
I don't care either, but that's what
I know.
Where the kids are.
I know.
And that's the thing, is it like, you know, us old, how old are you?
36.
No, you're not. Yeah,
I'm not old enough, but I'm too old also.
Yeah. So you're not too young. So, but that, you know, that as a thing, like we, you know, again, we're selling these cars to some of these kids and that are buying them and doing stuff with them. So it's cool. It's, you know, I mean, TJ Hunt and Dustin Williams and Randy and, like I said, I mean, I love them. They're customers. So,
yeah.
You know, and I just, it doesn't, you know, what they do doesn't exactly suit me. But, you know, I'd rather, you know, do something that you do or, you know, Jay or, you know, Jay Leno. And
my shows go the way that I do them because it's what I enjoy doing.
Right.
And if I don't enjoy doing it, I pivot.
Right.
And sometimes the audience doesn't like that. They go, we came to you for this.
Yeah.
And I go, well, I'm not going to do that. So if you want to leave, you can leave. But, you know, I'm not going to go back to doing something I hate because that's why you came here.
So back into competition then. I mean, there's always somebody who can come along and, you know, maybe hit some demographic that I'm not hitting.
Yeah.
You know, so that, you know, and talking to some people that we don't, you know, I mean, because, again, you know, just because of California and all over, you know, our problem is, you know, if we're selling cars to people in California, our high cost of entry.
Yeah.
You know, basically if I'm telling
them anything in California is a huge pain in the ass.
You know, if I'm telling them it's another $4,000 to $10,000 to do your car and, you know, I mean, you're buying a $7,000, $8,000 little van and I'm telling you it's another $4,000 on top. I mean, some people are like, you're fucking crazy. I'm not going to pay you that. I'm like,
well, that's a flat fee.
That's not,
it doesn't matter.
That's not to me. Yeah. It's trust me, it's to the lab, but it's still, they're still paying it. It's still costing them money. Yeah. So I can't help it. So.
I mean, I think just in my opinion, it seems based on this entire hour and 40 minute conversation that the best car to import is a Skyline.
Yeah.
I mean,
because
it's just the most, you think about imported car, Skyline.
Yeah. It's going to be worth money.
Yeah. So. It's going to be worth money. Last one. I talked about hiring live Jokeling for the band.
Yeah.
I'm getting married in the spring.
Oh,
and as a goof, like semi goof, I had my TV agent pull up the list of rates for like bands like that you've heard of.
Yeah.
Like I was like, what does it cost to get fucking Soul Asylum to play your wedding?
Okay. Yeah.
And I found that quite a bunch of them were cheaper than you'd think.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, more expensive for me. But you don't have to be a lot richer than me
right.
to do
okay.
it. So someone says, did I know Bill Hines races super trucks and is a sponsor in Indy? I'm trying to Google Bill Hines. I don't know. Is he a member of Live? William Joseph Hines. No, that's not him.
I don't think that's him.
Fred Hines. I don't know who – I'm guessing
who
he's –
who ran the Joker?
I want to guess –
this is official X Games athlete.
Yeah, so this guy Bill Hines, I think might be. Oh, here he's in the multi platinum rock band Live. Okay, cool. Is that the singer from Live? It's not. That's not the singer from Live. He apparently, so Bill Hines from Live also racing a stadium super trucks. Okay. That was the thing. Maybe someone, did they tell me here? No? I don't know. Anyway.
You got invited to a wedding.
Oh, thank you very much. I can't wait. awesome. Oh, Sean, yep. Thank you for coming down, dude. I appreciate it. It's a great show.
Yep.
I learned a lot. I'm glad that I now know the real story of Motorex. Some of it, anyway.
There's some more crazy shit, but yeah.
Well, fuck, yeah. The kidnapping part going to prison is really crazy.
Right.
That shit is wild. Check out importavehicle.com. That's where you can – I'm still on the Aristo here. That's where you can find top-ranked international vehicle importer Sean's inventory. If they got something you want, you can buy it here in California from them. And I guess presumably you'll ship cars wherever they need to go.
All over the U.S. Yeah,
that's
all the time.
Your thing.
Yeah, we ship them all over.
And if they don't have what you want, you can probably hit him up. Maybe he can find it. Find your vehicle. Here's a form. Boom. Yep. And you now, you and your team now, as you mentioned a couple times in casual, you have the capability to make these cars California legal. Yep. Some of them. All of them? Almost all of them?
Pretty much all of them. There's a few cars. If it's like got quite a bit of mods, I don't really want to tackle it because I got to put it back mostly to stock.
Right, right.
You know, there's some things about that, but pretty much anything I can do California on. If it's something that was sold here, about $6,500.
Okay.
And most of the time I try to beat the lab up as much as I can, you know, and get the prices down as much as I can. And I actually probably, if I'm doing California compliance, I actually probably lose a little bit of money.
Really?
Compared to selling it outside just because we do a little bit more work.
It costs you some money as well.
Yeah, I mean, if I put a stock gearbox on, like a car has filters on it, I put a stock gearbox on it, and I you know, we clean the injectors, and we kind of like go through the car again. Yeah. If it's been sitting for a while, change the oil. All those things are costs, and so it ends up probably costing me another $500 to do California. So
you mentioned it just right there. I remember you're a big fan of stock airboxes.
Yeah,
you're a big stock airbox guy.
Just for California, yeah.
But less headaches. So you pop the hood, you see a stock airbox.
I'm putting one back on my blue car.
Do you? Well, you. I mean, I remember you telling me that you can make a lot of power on the stock airbox.
Yeah,
the stock airbox is not the restrictor in the airflow.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
So I mean, I said I've done 600.
Yeah.
What did we do? What did we do with the box? We did 650.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
We made an extra hole in it, but it's, I mean, you know, we an extra feed, not this small, because like R33 boxes and 34 boxes are a little different, and they have an extra feed and stuff. But so we made an extra feed into the box, but
you don't need a shiny chrome intake. You probably don't even want one. No.
Yeah.
All right, and also follow on Instagram Top Rank Importers Yeah, I do now. There's good shit on there. Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming in. The Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. You just need something to talk into the internet and preferably something to say. Thanks very much, folks. I will see you next time. Goodbye.